to the end.
Welcome to episode 104 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
We've got so much good stuff coming up on this episode. Should we get into it? Should we let them know what's coming up?
Yeah! Our top three topic this time around is going to be our top three betrayals. Those bloody double crossers. Oh, we're going to be talking about them.
Rotters.
Oh, that damned scoundrels. Shakes my fist.
We're going back to the 50s this time for our rewatch. We're going to be watching Rebel Without a Cause.
Indeed we are. And from the old to the new, we're watching the very modern new thriller, Searching.
Movie Masturbate, and we're going to be masturbating over the one and the only Quentin Tarantino.
Oh dear.
Leave him wanting more.
The longest episode ever.
I think so.
We've got a brand new quiz. We don't just kind of rest on our morals here. We come up with
Rest on our what? Hold on, Gemma. Rest on our what?
Morals?
No.
53 seconds in.
Rest on our laurels.
Laurels!
Morals!
Moral and Hardy.
Amazing.
But yes, we're going to have a brand new quiz. We're not resting on our laurels.
No.
We're not. And it's going to be a good one, but you're going to have to stick around. So I'm not even going to give you the name at this point. You're going to have to just wait.
Oh, you tease.
I know.
And we'll have all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll give you our pop culture recommendations of the week. We're going to have a massive, massive prize giveaway, as per usual, and a whole heap of other banter. And clearly there's going to be a lot of mispronunciations today. Well, we've started strong.
It's because of this brother's cider we're drinking.
Oh, yeah.
It is nice. Mm. Should we toast to... There's nothing to toast
just
to this
toast
time.
Just toast to life.
Yeah, just to life.
Beautiful.
Guys, as well. I just thought, and this might be annoying for the listeners, but I thought I'd bring some sweets along to today.
We've got
in Haribo Tang Fastix.
Oh, I love Haribo.
And they're a share size bag.
Yeah, let's share.
And just for those out there, he didn't mispronounce that. It is actually Tang Fastix.
They are. What's your favourite one? Mine's the cola bottles.
Oh, I love the cherries.
Yeah, I like the cherries as well.
Look at Benny's already wanting more. Look at this.
Hey, come on, bring
so
love.
We're going to be chewing a lot for this episode.
What are these meant to be?
Keys.
No, that's a dummy.
Is that meant to be a dummy?
Yeah. Oh. You got suck it and see.
But yeah, I think we should eat Haribo throughout the whole episode. And yeah. If you are right. Listening, Haribo, send us some, you know, sweets.
Please do.
Guys, I don't know if you were looking on social media this week, you know, on the Twitter and the old Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
But a guy called Jaws19 did some fan art.
Mm.
And it had more likes than most of our updates when we're putting out a new episode. And people were asking for it to be their background and wallpaper on their phones and laptops. And it was a bloody good logo.
It's brilliant, yeah.
And I'd also like to add, he did my reimagined logo too.
Oh, plug-in already. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Who does
bloody
that?
Hell.
Mark and me.
But it made me think that maybe we need a bit of a spring clean in September.
Yeah?
Okay.
Do you think it's about time that we actually had a brand new logo?
I think it is.
I didn't want to say, but yeah.
Yeah?
We've had the same one for about the best part of 4 years, so yeah. I think it's time to freshen up.
Or a facelift.
Yeah.
But we at Skip to the End are all about the listeners and the fans, aren't we? We are.
Uh-huh. Always.
We're known for that. We're also known for producing great content.
Obviously.
But we are known for our fan interaction. So why don't we open it up to all of our listeners to come up with a logo?
It's a great idea.
I think that seems fair.
But we can't just say that the prize is they get to have that logo seen by thousands, because that is a good prize.
It is.
Pretty good.
But we'll give them a Last Exit to Nowhere t-shirt,
okay.
A big box of 10 Funko Pops, random ones that we choose, and we'll treat them to something else, like a surprise gift that they get on the day.
Oh, you sweetheart.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. So everyone out there, if you're interested in creating the brand new logo for the Skip to the End podcast, get your entries in. You can get us on Twitter at STTEpodcast, facebook.com/SkipToTheEndPodcast, Instagram @SkipToTheEndPodcast, or you can email it to us, podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. If you upload your design on any form of social media, make sure you tag us in. And also, why don't you put the hashtag STTEelogo?
Yeah,
I think
that's easy for us to find.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. You're doing us a favour. So hashtag STTEelogo. And we're going to give them a couple of episodes, shall we?
Yeah, because these things shouldn't be rushed.
Exactly, yeah. So we'll give you till episode 106. We'll reveal on 106 who the winner is. So let's say the last date for entries is Friday the 5th of October.
Brilliant.
So you get your entries across to us one way or another by Friday the 5th of October, and the best one wins.
That's incredible. And imagine that, if you actually win,
oh my
it
God.
Will be on our iTunes, our Podomatic, our Spotify, our website. Yep. It will be on people's keyrings.
Future t-shirt designs, maybe.
Future tattoos.
Well, I mean...
And if you actually get a Skip the End tattoo, we'll also give you a box of 10 Funkos. If you actually do it.
Please. Yeah. But not the current logo.
No, well pissed off.
The new one.
Severely outdated.
Yeah, this is good. I'm looking forward to what comes through. And don't worry if you're not a great artist. If you just sketch a picture of a stick man and a skip, like someone did.
We did that, yeah.
Might win. It won't. But you know what I mean? You never know.
Right then, I think we're spending too long resting on our morals. Let's go. Let's get started.
We're going to be kicking off this amazing episode with our top three betrayals. We're going to be talking about those moments where we see people double-cross each other and we're left in absolute disbelief. Ben, I love hearing your choices. And Mark, I do love hearing your choices too.
Oh, thanks.
Second best.
On this occasion, I want to hear what Ben's got to say first. So Ben, I'm going to throw it to you, buddy.
My first one is Amy Dunn in Gone Girl.
Oh my God, yes!
Don't go too big already.
Whoa. So after finding out that her husband Nick's cheating on her, Amy then fakes her own death and frames Nick for her murder. Talk about an overreaction, you know.
Kinda.
Just a tad, you know. No doubt that Nick, played with douchey charm by Ben Affleck, is an asshole, but I don't think the punishment fits the crime in this instance. You know, for Amy to do this to a man she supposedly loves or loved, it's the ultimate act of betrayal. You know, leave him, yes. Burn his clothes, fine. Badmouth him to anyone who'll listen, absolutely fine. But fake your own death and fit him up for the murder. it's a touch too far. And as much as I love this film and the book that originally spawned it, I still hate that Amy doesn't get her comeuppance at the end.
She really doesn't.
She gets away with it. I wanted her dead or in jail.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she gets neither of those things. She's still breathing, she's still surviving,
she's
still thriving. She wins.
She wins.
And, you know, I'm usually a fan of the bad guy winning, but I just hated her so much that it infuriated me. But a large part of that goes because of the terrific performance by Rosamund Pike.
Yeah.
She's amazing. She plays her with ice and venom.
Mm-hmm.
And she does it so well. And she's able to shift from, like, cold-hearted bitch into the fake damsel in distress so easily, shockingly easily. It's one of my favourite performances of the last decade, I'd say, and quite rightly, it was nominated for an Oscar.
Indeed. A shame she didn't get it, but the way that, I mean, that whole champagne bottle scene, when you see what she does in order to portray what that CCTV shows, and my God, that messed with my head.
Yeah.
Like, we can be absolute bastards at times, but she is king bastard.
Yeah.
The thing is, we see both sides. So at the start, we see how she's so beautiful, she looks so good, and they've got that beautiful romance. I remember when is it Ice and Sugar's blowing in the air?
Yes.
And he gives her the perfect kiss, and you think this romance is what you all dream of.
Yeah.
And then an hour later, she's cut all her hair off, she's put on weight, she's eating stuff to make herself look like the complete opposite. It's the transformation is sort of Christian Bale level of acting, and it's scary. I was watching that thinking, I don't ever want to date a woman ever again, because it's just absolutely terrifying. And the thing is, I think Ben Affleck plays the douche perfectly, because he's always trying to look the good guy in front of the camera, and they're just having him at every opportunity, aren't they? When he's smiling, they're getting him. When he's like not looking in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And he is having an affair, and he's with that... what's the actress's name? That's she's in the music video.
I know you mean. The one
Emily,
who's always
like Emily Ratajkowski or something, yeah.
She does get a rat out a lot.
There we go. Well, that's happened. Let's go.
But... it's a great film,
and
it's harrowing, and I love watching it. I watch it again and again. Mm. I think it's so well done. And the fact is, it's Fincher, which you know is going to be good, but the score by Trent absolutely
Reznor.
Marvellous.
Yeah, so good. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a scary film.
Did you know that he based that score on, he went to a masseuse one day, it had like a really uneasy undertone to it, and so he used that kind of inspiration into Gone Girl.
Wow.
You listen to it, it doesn't relax you.
No?
Because it's meant to sound like a rubber tug shop.
Yeah.
Rubber tug shop.
If I opened an actual massage parlor that was giving hand shandies, I would call it.
You did the action as well,
yeah,
though.
Yeah. Well, you got to, just so you know what I meant.
Well, I mean, hand shandies, usually the hints.
Or Pamela Henderson's. That would be good.
Christ.
This is already getting wank, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, literally. Yes. Come on, Mark.
Mine is Dennis Nedry in Jurassic Park.
Oh.
What an arsehole he is. So he's this tech guy, he's the nerd, and he just betrays the entire company by stealing embryos to sell to a rival company.
He struggled.
But he does get his comeuppance. So unlike Gone Girl, we see him getting absolutely eaten to death in the best way. Not eaten half death, the full on. But it's that scene where he's having his dinner, he's going out to meet this business executive, he's showing how he can hide it in that, it's like spray foam, isn't it? He's sitting at the table and he's got this embryo that he's completely stole from the company. And you think, this guy does not deserve to get away with this. That death, when we see that dinosaur with the...
Yeah.
With the big, like... What's it called?
I don't know. It's like an umbrella.
It's like an umbrella,
head,
and he just like sort of spaffs in his face, which is true.
I
don't know about true.
They didn't have a romantic candlelight dinner before that happened.
But it's sprayed in his face.
Yeah.
And then we just see him blinded, and then you know he's going to be mauled to death. So I'm glad that it got his kind of comeuppance, because he deserved it. He was an absolute arsehole. But I did like him because of his Hawaiian shirt.
So who's the actor who played him?
I don't know what his name is in real life. He's the large character.
It's good that he's done his research. Is it Wayne Knight, the guy who played Newman in Seinfeld?
Yes, that's the guy. Yeah. But yes, I do my research. His name's Dennis, that's all I care about.
Hawaiian shirt guy.
Yes, but he's an arsehole and he should never have betrayed the others, and it makes me furious. But at least he died in a good... That's one of my most famous deaths in sort of cinema history.
Who's the one that gets eaten on the toilet?
I don't know, but that's a good way
to
go.
It's a cracking death, that is.
I would probably crack one out if I was about to get my head bitten off.
Too vulgar, this.
Where is this going?
Well, let's draw a line under this, right? Okay, because this is a lot...
That's the one doing it.
All have a Haribo.
Oh, yeah.
Wash our mouths out. They're too dirty. Wash them out with a cola or a cherry. Now, Gemma, you've got to lower the tone. No, you've got to higher the tone.
Sorry.
Brilliant.
And let's be nice.
You've literally caught me in the middle of chomping on a Coke bottle. Okay. Mine's a horror, and it's Billy and Stewart from Scream.
Oh, nice.
A mass killer stalking teenagers in the small town of Woodsboro. And Neve Campbell, Sydney, she's trying to find out who on earth is killing her friends and her townsfolk's people. Skip to the end of the very last scene in the film, and it's unveiled that her boyfriend, Billy, is the mastermind behind the whole thing. She's devastated, you know? Mm. She had sex with him, for crying out bloody loud. I know, they touched, they did tongues and everything.
No way.
So she runs into the arms of her mate, Stuart. She's like, oh my God, help me, he's a maniac. And then he just goes, surprise, Sydney.
That's a good impression.
Thank you. And it turns out only he's bloody in on the act too. She's completely betrayed. She's sidestepped. She can't believe what's actually going on. And it makes you wonder, the person that you embed your trust in, the person that you think is your partner, your buddy, your pal, your confidant, turns out they're the ones that are trying to off you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if that's not betrayal, what the bloody hell is? It's crazy to think that somebody can get so into your inner circle that they're just trying to decapitate you, make sushi out of you. They want you gone. But it's commonly seen now in the slasher genre. I think this was one of the first horror films that really had that surprise element of, it could be somebody very, very close to you. In the past, it was just some random monster or crazy fiend that was out just offing people left, right and centre. But these were two people that we got to know very well during the whole film. We thought they were funny. We thought they were sweet. They thought they were caring. But it turns out they're absolute maniacs and they killed a heck of a lot of people in their path.
Are they the two that, to try and make it look like they're not the killer, they start cutting each other with knives?
Yes, yep,
that's
indeed.
Fucked up, that's
it. There's a proper decent knife wound in his stomach. You feel it.
Yeah, and Matthew Lillard, who plays Stuart, he was really likeable throughout the whole film. He was kind of goofy, kind of, you know, like, hey, what's up, guys? But his sort of charm, his personality crept into that kind of sinister side because he was crazy. He had gone mad and he was still cracking jokes during that scene. It's fully disturbing.
That was the original decent... Well, not the original slasher. We've had many before.
Of course.
But when that came along, I wish they didn't make any more sequels because it was a good standalone movie.
Yeah, it's a great
Scream
film.
Is a really good classic horror.
It was the reinvention of the slasher flick. And thanks to the late, great Wes Craven, he was the guy responsible for it.
Yeah.
And he was almost like the father of the slasher.
Yeah.
And he only went and reinvented it.
Yeah, because it was kind of like the first postmodern horror that was it had a wink and a smirk about it. As it was doing something, it was commenting on it. So you had that one guy. Was it Jamie Kennedy's character?
It was Jamie Kennedy.
Talking about the rules of surviving in a horror movie. Yeah.
Never went up the stairs. Yeah.
Don't say I'll be right back, because you won't be right back.
Great film, actually. I've not seen that in a long time. Need to watch that again.
Yeah, maybe around Halloween time.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That would be good.
Let's go round again.
I'm going to keep this one brief because we spoke about it a little bit last week, and it's Fredo Corleone in The Godfather Part 2.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Fredo is the dim-witted and weak-willed black sheep of the Corleone family, and then he's jealous when Michael is picked to take over the family above him, and he's approached by a rival gangster, Eli Roth, to assist them against Michael, which leads to an unsuccessful attempt on Michael's life. Michael then figures out that it was Fredo, or that Fredo was involved in the botched hit, and he makes the fateful decision to have his brother killed. So he goes up to him at that party and gives him the kiss of death and says, "I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart." And it's just one of the best scenes in film history. And then that leads to the devastating moment where Michael's assassin takes Fredo out onto the lake and shoots him in the head. Whilst Michael sits there in his palatial estate, just impassively watching it happen. It's some dark, dark, cold shit. You know, it's a hell of a betrayal, though, on Fredo's part, because you never turn on the family. You never turn on the family. And whether that means your crime family or your biological family, which in this case, it's both.
Yeah.
You know, he fucked them over royally. I'm not saying he got what he deserved, but, you know, karma's a bitch, isn't it? It's a great performance by John Cazale as well as Fredo, because he's utterly spineless and petulant. He's like a child. He's a little kid who was never built for that world. He was never built to be a gangster. He was always a wannabe. And then, of course, you've got Al Pacino as Michael, who's just phenomenal. He's trying his best to show that he isn't hurt by Fredo's actions, even though he quite clearly is. He's utterly, utterly devastated. One, that his brother's done this to him, and two, that he's going to have to take the ultimate action to rectify it. It's an astounding film. It's an astounding betrayal. Two astounding performances. Love it.
It is becoming Godfather 2 cast. Yeah. But this is your new Blade Runner, I've noticed. Mm. But it's good. And like you said on the last episode, I need to do the trilogy.
Yeah.
I'm still planning to. I'm not going to do it without you. And you're welcome to come as well, Jem.
Ta!
Thanks. We didn't actually invite you. I listened back to the episode. And we're like, yeah, we'll get Scott. We'll get Benny. We'll get Ben. Sorry. You are welcome as well.
Thank you.
As long as you supply all the spirits for the evening.
I'm a Haribo.
Bye!
Maybe we do the first one as a rewatch at some point.
Yeah.
And we'll never do the third.
No.
Is it that bad, genuinely? Or is it just because the others are so good?
Yeah, it's that. Yeah. So if you saw the third one and weren't aware of the first two films, you'd watch it and you think, this is great. And it was nominated for several Oscars.
Yeah.
It's just not up to the standard of the first two.
Like Police Academy.
Yes.
It's exactly that, this, Mark.
Yeah, Godfather Part 3 is very much the Mission to Moscow of the Godfather films.
My next one is probably the most obvious. Everyone betrayed me. I'm fed up with this world. It's one of the most iconic betrayals in cinema history. Mark and Lisa. How could they do this behind Johnny's back? And
but what film are you referring to, Mark?
It's the absolute classic, The Room.
Oh, yeah.
That cult classic. Now, we've all seen that on Skip to the End, haven't we?
Far too many times.
It's a masterpiece of a movie. And the way it's crafted, like you're talking about, like The Godfather 2. This is like The Room never needed to be Room 2. It didn't need to be because it's just
perfect.
A standalone film.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want a cash grab. We might get a 3D version.
Ooh,
Tommy's once said
that definitely wouldn't be a cash grab.
Or it might come to Broadway musical. It's all true. But The Room, we get to see this amazing character, Johnny, who's very much like Al Pacino. He's one of the finest actors.
Double.
We see how he can give everything to a performance. But we see his best friend, Mark. And I'm annoyed that I'm called Mark, because I would never betray someone like Johnny. It's too dark. But he gets with Lisa, and he probably gives her that life and that excitement that Johnny couldn't. I mean, Johnny's got the money, he's got the house.
He's got the looks.
He's definitely got the body.
The hair. The mane of a lion.
I know. And the way he talks. Imagine that in your ear, just whispering to you.
Oh, hi, babe.
I'm home. But yes, the way that Mark does this to him, it's so bad. And he doesn't really kind of get his revenge, because it ends with Johnny blowing his own head off. So it's quite a sad end. That's a very good performance, by the way. One of the best movie history deaths of all time.
Yeah, and before that, he humps the dress as well. Don't forget that.
If I was going to die, I would probably get my girl's dress, hump the fuck out of it, and then blow my head off.
Always.
It's a hero's death right there.
Shall we move on?
Please. Yeah, let's.
Look, you guys need to have some input. What do you think about Mark and Lisa?
Well, I think he should keep his stupid opinions in his pocket, Ben.
I agree. It is an absolute atrocious betrayal.
Yes.
How dare he?
Of acting?
Because they were best friends.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
How could he do that to him?
Yes.
Nobody betray me.
It was his future wife.
You knew I was going to pick this, didn't you? Let's be honest.
Yes, I did.
Wait for Mac and me.
Oh, Jesus.
Come on, Gemma.
Lando Calrissian, Empire Strikes Back.
I've got it as well. Yeah.
Brilliant.
We get a better understanding of who Lando really is in Solo, which we really, really enjoyed earlier on in the year. Oh, what a little toe rag he was, eh?
Yeah.
A little scamp. Obviously, when Han's, Leia, Chewbacca and C-3PO arrive at Cloud City, they meet Han's old friend Lando. And he's a bit of a charmer. He's a bit of a babe, too. You know, he starts macking on Leia as well. And Han's is like, whoa, 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 she's a mid, buddy. But you think that, you know, he's going to be perhaps a new member of the team. You know, we're going to see him in more adventures. But turns out, he's ratted on them with old Darth Vader, and he gets them. He gets them in the shit. What a cheeky bastard he was!
Cheeky bastard.
But it's so gutting. When I first watched it, I was really sold on how he presented himself and how he was, and I just instantly liked him. But for somebody to do that to one of his oldest friends and these great bunch of rogues, that's not fair. And he did it for all himself.
See, I disagree. I think we're being unfair on Lando. Darth Vader and the might and the weight of the Empire had arrived at Bespin Cloud City beforehand and basically didn't give Lando an option.
Right,
it was do this or we'll fuck you over.
Still,
so I don't think it was
hurts.
I don't think it was entirely for his own interest. He was protecting his own arse, certainly, but you know, he was on a hide into nothing. What else could he have done in that scenario? And also, he's a rogue.
Yeah,
don't put your faith in a rogue. That's what rogues do, man. They do roguish shit.
Very roguey.
He's very roguey.
He's Seth Rogen.
The clue's in the name, do you know what I mean? Hi, I'm a rogue. I'm all right then, just keep going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he rectified it, because in Return of the Jedi, he was with the rest of the team going into Jabba's Palace to rescue Han. You know, he did his stuff. And you can't be too upset with him, because he's played by Billy Dee Williams, who's just so fucking charming and cool.
He was a hottie.
You really do quite fancy him, don't you?
Hey, I'm not going to lie about this shit. I mean, he was fit.
And he's going to be back in the next one, isn't he?
Come on!
Yeah.
He's quite old now.
Doesn't matter.
They actually didn't realise, but they're going to cast him as Yoda. He's that old now. He's got those wide bits around his ears, and he's not going to use CGI anymore.
Bits around his ears?
Those bits of fluff.
His ears?
Those are the white hairs you get.
I don't know. I'm very, very young, I'm afraid. I don't know what you're talking about.
So have you finished Ben's choice for him?
It was both of our choices.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. That's it. You're all out, Ben.
Yeah.
I think we've said what we've said.
Bloody hell. Is it back to me already?
Yeah.
I wanted to breathe and eat some Haribo.
Well, I mean, when you're talking about Johnny from The Room, it takes all day.
My final one is from Almost Famous, when Stillwater betray William with all their whole story that was about to be published in the Rolling Stone magazine, and they turn around and fuck him so hard by saying none of it was true.
Nah.
None of it should be published, and it's absolutely brutal, because I fall in love with the character of William. You saw this for the first time, didn't you, when we did the rewatch?
Yeah, yeah.
And the film is, I think it's one of Cameron Crowe's best. It's got the best soundtrack. The performances are fantastic. Everything about it is a real good feel-good film. But I fell in love with the character of William. I wanted to be him. He's going out there, touring with this band. He's getting to hang out with people like Sabbath. He's on the road. Back in those days, that must be the dream job, to be one of these kind of... They call him the NME, but he's the journalist. He's living the life of a rock star. He gets to meet Penny Lane, who looks unbelievable in her coat. Mm-hmm. I must say this right now. She is. If you're a girl, wear a coat like that and you instantly go to... You know, two marks higher. If you're a 7, put a Penny Lane coat on, you're automatically a 9.
Right.
So if
Gemma, is that what women do? They always worry about how Mark feels.
Yeah. They go, oh no, is he going to think I'm a 9 today?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think he probably sees me as maybe a 4 today. No. I don't know. Oh, well, I didn't bring the coat. That would have instantly boosted me up 3 points.
You'll never be a 6. But anyway, the fact
you're
is,
fed up with this world.
But the fact is, they've got this great story, and he's been sent on this mission to get the really good story, and they're going to make the cover. Do you know what I mean? It's unbelievable. It's this moment's time for this band to shine. And what do? They turn around and deny everything. I think they turn around to him and say, he's just a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Dwight as well who says that line. He's just a kid. And you feel for him because he's been there, he's lived it, he's had to stay, he's missed his college graduation. His mom's furious with him. He's going to get in a lot of trouble. Finally, at the end of the film, we do get Russell, who steps in and says, publish everything, which is the payoff. But that moment, because at the first time you see it, you think they fucked him. Is there actually going to be a way out? My heart stopped. I was gutted. I really wanted him to be successful because he's always the underdog. He was bullied at school. He never got the beard. He went 2 classes above. He didn't have the moustache. He missed out. He never got the girl, did he? He never even got Penny Lane herself. She went with Russell and rubbed it in his face. And all he got was a drunk kiss. Devastating. Absolutely heartbreaking.
We said this when we reviewed it, but I love Frances McDormand in that film so much as the mum. And is it near the end when she meets Russell and she's just got no time for him at all? She's such a badass. She doesn't give a shit.
And when she's on the phone to him, like, you will not do this, you will not do that. And he's like, I don't like your mom.
Don't do drugs.
What a film. That's another film that we should never bring back as a rewatch, because I was just about to say we should do it as a rewatch.
We've done it already.
But we fucking have. Yeah. But what a great film.
It is.
It's cracking.
Yeah. Finish me off. Come on, Gemma. The awkward silence makes it worse.
I know. So my third and our final choice of this topic is Thanos in Infinity War.
Ooh, very new.
Nice.
Thank you. So Thanos has obviously been bigged up for the past 5 years as the ultimate nemesis for the Avengers.
Sorry, Gemma. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Yeah. This is something we should have said at the start of this topic.
Oh, yeah.
Spoiler alert. Oh. Because we've been giving away some very key plot points, and we're now about to do it for a very new film. So spoiler alert.
Well done, Ben, after five topic jokes.
We've got our times on our website. Just go to the end of this one if you don't know what happens with Infinity War. We knew he was going to be a very memorable foe, but we didn't expect him to do one particular act that he committed against a long-loved character. It was noted in Volume 1 of Guardians of the Galaxy that he had always favoured his adopted daughter Gamora over Nebula. She was obviously a strong, victorious warrior, and she was also seen as his Achilles' heel. So during his search for the Soul Stone, he captures Gamora and he takes her to the planet where it's housed at, guarded by the Red Skull. He's informed by the Red Skull that the only way to retrieve this is by sacrificing the life of someone he truly loves. And it's Gamora!
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh my god! So he chucks her off the mountain and she dies. But to murder the person that you're supposed to be extremely fond of, that is very, very despicable, especially when it's for selfish gains. He wanted to have complete and utter control of the universe. He ended up wiping half of it out anyway. But what a git.
A git, I think, is probably the underestimated word. No, what's the word?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Underestimated word
Cockwomble.
You should use. Absolute bastard.
Yeah.
Awful.
Twat jockey.
Okay.
Have we got any more?
Twat jockey.
Where's
nice.
That one come from?
Bloody hell.
But one of the things I think this film does so well is that it humanises Thanos. He could have easily have been a one-dimensional villain, as he so often has been in the comics in the past. But when he chooses to kill Gamora, you can see it's breaking his heart because he really does love her.
Yeah.
And it would only work if he loved her. And it's a brilliant performance behind all layers of CGI from Josh Brolin.
It's one of my favourite scenes from the entire Marvel universe. I'm so excited about watching Infinity War on Blu-ray, DVD again. And I'm even more excited about next year's offering, so come on.
I literally just bought it on Blu-ray.
I need
to. Got it this weekend. £15 in HMV.
You should have had it for free. Did they know who you are?
I know, I was annoyed. But yeah, it looks spectacular. I'm watching it again. I did forget how quickly we lose Loki. It was like, fuck!
Blink your eye and he's gone.
Yeah. Good film.
It is a great film, yeah. I've liked it much more. Now that I've seen it for a second time, I like it much more than I did first time.
Yeah.
First time I was just kind of like, it's half a film, where's the rest of it? But now I'm like, it's fine, I get it. We'll wait. And we've got Captain Marvel coming first as well.
Pictures this week.
Looks so good.
I know by the time this episode comes out, it would have happened, but surely we're going to get a trailer soon.
I really hope so.
Me too.
She looks great.
She does.
I'm very excited.
She's a good friend of ours. Remember when we met her in London?
Oh, you guys did.
Kept you there. Me and Ben went to the toilet.
Going to the loo, and then all of a sudden your bezzy mates are Captain Marvel.
I mean, met her's a stretch.
We
stood near her and surreptitiously took a photo of ourselves with her.
Oh, you went back. I actually had a drink with her.
Did you?
We were
fuck?
Talking all about the podcast. She listens to us, Skip to the End. So that's her favourite podcast. So,
really?
That's an endorsement. Has anything come through on social media this week?
I'm glad you asked.
Oh.
It has. Going to Twitter. Our number one fan, Martin Street at Martin the Geek. Hey, Martin. Rose turning in on Chris on Get Out.
Oh, yeah.
Big plot
twist.
Still
don't love that film, I'll be honest.
No, I wasn't a huge fan.
You're crazy. Anakin Skywalker, he was the chosen one in Revenge of the Sith.
I love that scene, though, when he's got his legs sawn off.
No!
That is, no, not that bit, before, when he's just lying there burning. That's dark.
Yeah. And unfortunately, agrees with Mark. Lisa and Mark going behind Johnny's back in the room.
How dare they?
How dare they? Simon Armstrong at Gunnar Armstrong said, Dr. Elsa Schneider bumping uglies with Jones Sr. and fooked Indiana good and proper in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Nice.
Benny from Total Recall. Like fuck, did he add 5 kids to feed?
I haven't seen that film for years.
No,
I know.
A long time.
It's been
good
a while.
Movie.
And Burke from Aliens. He says, don't see them effing each other over for a goddamn percentage.
I would love to see that again because it's probably my fourth choice. It was very close between that and Almost Famous.
Keith Bloomfield at hardluck_hotel said, Ash from Alien. Oh, yeah. Little
horrible.
Cheeky one. Cypher from The Matrix.
Yeah, he's a prick.
Yeah. All for a steak. Silly Billy. And Jim Phelps from Mission Impossible.
Yes, from the first the first movie.
I can't
movie.
Remember. What happened?
Neither can I.
Yeah, he basically turns on the TV. He's basically the bad guy of the first Mission Impossible film, even though the TV series on which it was based, Jim Phelps was the main good guy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I'm shocked. Ali, at Ali underscore the underscore geek, said Frederick Chilton recording conversations in Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm.
Faye Dunaway from Fatal Attraction. And then finally, Samuel L. Jackson in Unbreakable.
Yeah. Oh.
And then we're going to go to Facebook. So Clive Bullock said Stinky Pete's betrayal from Toy Story 2.
Oh, that's a big one.
It Stinky held, Pete the Prospector.
Held my breath.
I thought one of you might have Lotso the Bear.
I know. Yeah,
Lotso the Bear.
He was a bastard.
I know. The Hunchback from 300. And then finally, Talia's portrayal of Batman in The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
And then Rich Johnson is going to give us our last three. So he said Dudley Smith from LA Confidential.
That was my fourth. Yeah, I very nearly
amazing.
Had that.
Lando from Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. And finally, Cobra from Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
Oh, that's a great one.
It is.
Isn't it just? So thank you very much, guys. And keep M coming.
Who's going to be giving us our next top three?
Yeah, that will be me.
Ooh.
I love celebrating those people who are overlooked and underseen. Television is very much a writer's medium, but in movies, scriptwriters tend to be forgotten. It's a director's and an actor's medium. So I want to rectify that. I want to give some love to our top three screenwriters.
Fantastic. Nice.
We've been to our local View Cinema to see Searching. In the feature film debut of writer-director Anish Changanti, a panicked father tries to track down his missing 16-year-old daughter by tracing her digital footprint. The gimmick of the movie is that it's all shot from the point of view of smartphones and computer screens. John Cho stars as the father, Michelle Lahr as his missing daughter, and Deborah Messing as the cop assigned to the case. There will be spoilers. We're going to be speaking about major plot points as well as the ending. So if you haven't yet seen the film, please do skip to the end of this particular segment and come back and check it out once you've seen it. Gemma, I'm going to throw this over to you first. What were your thoughts on Searching?
Well, we saw a similar layout back in 2014 with Unfriended, mm-hmm. and I wasn't really bowled over with that. I thought the gimmick was a big oversell for a very poor film. I enjoyed this. I don't think I'm going to remember it in 6 months' time. Mm-hmm. It could have scraped off about 15, 20 minutes of the film, but I have not sobbed at the first 5 minutes of a film since Up.
Oh, mm-hmm. God.
Mm-hmm. John Cho was all right, but I think he may have been underused slightly. But overall, it's an okay film and great twists.
Interesting. Mark, thoughts?
I really enjoyed it. I went in there, it was only about an hour and a half, wasn't it? So it felt like it went over like that. It just literally, rapid film. But I just thought it was great. I thought I might get a bit kind of wound up with the gimmick of just looking at a computer screen for probably 70% of the film. But it worked. I thought it wasn't groundbreaking, but I enjoyed it. I thought it kept my attention. I liked what happened. I liked all the different uses and showing how powerful social media can be now. I enjoyed it a lot. I came out of the cinema thinking about it quite a lot, and I think it was a good trip to the cinema.
Okie doke. I think it was an incredibly clever film, very cleverly made, but with an insanely dumb twist. So I disagree with you entirely, Gemma, when you said it had a good twist. I thought the twist was fucking laughable, to be quite honest. So let's skip to the end then. Let's talk about what happens in this. So John Cho, as I've said, is the father looking for his missing daughter, and then he's got a copper who's helping him on this, played by Deborah Messing. It then turns out that Deborah Messing's son knocked the daughter off a cliff, and then he called his mum to help him cover it up. And that was the twist, that she was in it all along. Which immediately when that twist was revealed, I just groaned. I was like, this is fucking shit. But then it got worse, because if you think about it, all through the film, she is instigating the father to help her solve the crime. She's like, yeah, you need to get out there, you need to be talking to her friends, break into her computer, look at this, blah, 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 blah. One, no cop would ever do that.
No.
A cop would never get a parent of a missing kid to do the investigative work for them. And two, they sure as shit wouldn't do it if they were the fucking criminal. Why would you try and put him on the trail of you? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It's really fucking stupid. Gemma, tell me why I'm wrong. Tell me why it was a good twist.
I don't know. Can I ring a friend?
Nope.
You have got no friends.
I did actually talk about this with my friend today. And she said she said exactly the same thing as you, Ben. So okay. It's actually quite interesting that what you've just said is exactly, it echoed exactly what she said. Uh-huh. And the reason why I enjoyed the twist is because I genuinely didn't see it coming. I didn't see the little red herring that they planted earlier on in the film about the story of her son stealing that money, saying he was collecting for a charity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then she, you know, it turned out to be that was the foundation of what the twist ultimately was. I also liked the twist where you were led to believe that John Cho's brother somehow had something to do in it. And I really liked how they twist that on its head by the discovery of his sweatshirt. I think it was one of his football teams that he follows.
Yeah.
But I did like that. I liked how that panned out. But I genuinely did not see that coming. I thought the suspense that it built up throughout the film was really tense. And I thought it did pack the punch that I thought I enjoyed.
See, I agree. I too didn't see it coming because I didn't think any writer would be stupid enough to write something like that. Who would see that coming? It's fucking dumb. Mark?
I thought at the point where we thought it was his brother was like, wow, this is great.
It was
I'm
dark,
well happy with
yeah.
this. But I looked and we're only about 55 minutes into the film. So I was like, this can't now drag out far. Now, I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. I was sold on that. It was his brother. He did it. He was probably touching her up and then he murdered her. What a dark end. Brilliant film. But hey, social media helped him work it out. I'd have been happy.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So let's just pretend that happened.
That's not great. That was the end of the film. Yeah.
But yeah, you are
this
right.
This is the real end.
It was ridiculous. And then they went to actually arrest her. And I just thought at that point, why are you arresting her? Has she done something? I thought that might be her saying, look, I fucked up. I did it. And that would have still made it better. But then to say, it was my son I'm trying to help. Like you said, why would you lead someone down a path if your jail sentence is waiting for you
exactly.
at the end of the path.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I liked it. I'm sticking
with it. No, and that's fine. And that's what's good about us reviews. We're not always going to be on the same page. But I just thought, try something different. That end just ruined a really good film that was really just different. And I liked it all. It was working for me.
And another thing that was really stupid is she also frames an ex-con to take the rap for it. And it's the same ex-con that she is photographed standing next to in a picture that was on local news websites.
Yeah.
Why would she do that?
Yeah.
She's supposed to be a very intelligent detective. So why would she frame some guy who there's a photo of her hanging out with?
Yeah.
It's fucking stupid.
Wasn't she a volunteer as well? Yeah. She wasn't even an official sheriff or cop or anything. I'm sure she was
No. She's a cop. She just volunteered to take that case because
she wanted
to cover
she
a
said,
trip.
I'll do,
a
volunteer. I'll do.
No, she wasn't. No. Oh yeah, because that's what they do. They let volunteers run potential homicide investigation.
Do you do work experience here?
Jesus.
You look a bit old. Yeah, I just want to do it. I never got to do it when I was at school. Come on in. Which case should we assign to you? Here you go.
See, that would excuse her being as stupid as she was if she was like a work experience kid.
But yeah, it was a bad ending. But everything up to that point, I was sold on. I love the fact we're looking at his screen and we see all the audio and we see the FaceTime in different people and then the security cameras. And you would think watching a computer screen for that long gets boring. And it didn't. I loved all the different ways of going on Facebook, making friends, trying to contact them, seeing who linked to who. Brilliant.
But did you not think it was one big advert for Apple?
Yeah, well, and Microsoft, because they were using Windows XP in the first few years and stuff. It was heavy on the product placement.
Massively.
The thing I found as well, as clever as it was, it just didn't feel cinematic to me.
I agree.
I was sat there in the movie theatre thinking, this doesn't feel like I'm watching a film. It felt like I was watching an extended episode of Catfish.
Yes,
with Max and Neve. Mm. Yes,
remember Catfish?
Yeah,
that was a good series. Like, it's amazing when they're like, there's this guy who's really naive, and he's like, oh yeah, she's amazing, this girl I've met her. Here's a photo of her. It's like Napoleon Dynamite with that, you know, look at her bangs, and she's really hot, blonde hair. Have you met her? No. What have you done? I've just spoke to her. I put £5,000 in her bank account, but she's my world. I can't wait to go and meet her. They turn up. It's an 85-year-old man with a big ball sack jerking, and you're literally like, surprise. And you just see his face. And it's like, did you not think to have a phone call with this girl or ask for some more photos?
Yeah.
I love Catfish.
But I don't understand how the series has run so long, because you'd think people have got wise to it by now.
It's still going on. I mean, it spawned from a documentary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't think it was a documentary.
Yeah.
I think people just set it up now on purpose just to get themselves on the show.
One of them was that. One of them was that case.
I'll imagine more of them than one. Yeah. That's probably the only one that got caught.
Yeah.
Right, we've spun quite far away from
searching.
Over
there.
That's MTV.
We've discussed the end, so let's go back to the start. So, Gemma, you talked about crying at the start, and I assume you're referring to the montage at the beginning.
I'm definitely not responding to the possibility that it was the uncle. But yes, I was. I thought it was so clever the way how it told you the story of this family and how they became and how they grew up. And I think one of the most obvious points was when we see the mother go to the doctors and then be diagnosed with an illness. And one of the most, the one point that really got me was when you had a date, say mom's coming home, then that date gets moved back, and it just finally gets deleted. I didn't think anything that would be digitally shown to me, something like that, would really pack a punch. And it really did cut me up. I just thought it was a really clever way to invoke sadness to the audience and go, this is the situation with this family now. And it just told me everything I needed to know in a space of, 3 minutes? Really clever.
Yeah, I love that montage. And the way that that was done, using little videos that they'd taken, or pictures or calendar entries and all that kind of stuff, I thought that was really smart. And having watched that, I was thinking, I'm going to really like this film. Yeah. If this is an indication of what the rest of the film's like, it's going to be great. Yeah.
Did you notice they used technology at the time, so it wasn't like your iPhone X's or anything like that? It was really basic kind of Microsoft stuff, and then as it progresses you get better HD quality videos. Like, really clever.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was up, though. It was just a complete homage of up, because even she dies, didn't she? I think of cancer and up, and it was just a bit of a copy. So not come up with more original idea.
No, not happy with it.
No, just have a car crash or something. Make it a different ending.
My God.
The thing that I thought that the film in general lacked was tension. I think for a thriller of this type, you expect there to be heavy doses of tension, and it just lacked in that department for me. And I think that was because of the gimmick, because we can only see things through camera phones and computer screens and FaceTime calls and all that kind of stuff. It takes away the necessary filming techniques and camera angles that experienced directors use to build tension. They couldn't do any of that because we could only ever have these POV shots from cameras.
And you've just got John Cho looking at the corner of the screen constantly. Yeah. And I really like the guy. I think it's great that he's gotten a major leading role in a film. I really want to see more of him. I've liked some of his back work, but I wanted him to be utilised a little bit more.
Yeah, he did well with what he was given.
He did. He did do really well. But I just wish there was just a little bit more where we could actually get a good range of what he's all about. I think the only time we did was there was somebody videoing him having a go at a potential suspect of his daughter's disappearance.
Oh, in the cinema and he was fighting and stuff. Yeah, I like that, though. I love that it got on YouTube and you saw the amounts of comments and stuff. It just shows what life's like now. It's all about the whole social media. It's powerful stuff.
Yeah, it was very good. I really like John Cho. I think he's been let down a little bit with this. I think he deserves a better vehicle.
I completely agree.
He's a damn good actor.
He is.
Well, I've said about everything I need to say on this one. How about you guys?
Ditto.
I was just searching for something else to say, but there's nothing.
Nailed it. Well done.
There we go. Yeah. Let's score it.
Unbelievable. Gemma, out of 10, what are you giving it?
A respectable 7. Mm-hmm. Good idea. You know, we wanted to see a little bit more, but I think it deserves a 7.
Okie doke, Mark.
Yeah, good film. Enjoyed it. Cinema was good. 7 out of 10.
The cinema was good.
Yep. We didn't have a wonky speaker.
That's true.
So that made it good for me.
Oh, good on you.
Yeah. It's worth an extra point.
It was going to be a 6, but the fact we could hear what was going on, 7.
Well, I am giving it a 6. I didn't think it was up to much, to be honest, but it was a passable way to spend an hour and a half. So that gives it a skip to the end, 7 out of 10.
It's competition time, sponsored by Haribo. So, if you listened to our last episode 103, which was Black Klansman, I bloody love that film. More think about it.
Yeah,
I'm loving how many people on social media came and said they've watched it since and bloody loved it. Some people's movies of the year I've seen.
Yeah.
Can't agree more.
But on that episode, as always, we gave some amazing prizes away, and we started with the book for Black Klansman, a limited edition version from Universal Studios. So thank you to those guys for sending one across. Really simple question we put out there was, who directed the movie Black Klansman?
Spike Lee.
It's true, and David Gwillem on Facebook got that right, so he'll be getting the book in the post. Our good friends Last Exit to Nowhere knew that we were mass debating over, I can't say at this point because it will ruin the answer,
right?
Some famous director.
Okay.
That's a woman as well.
And Jesus Christ.
What we did is we had the Genko tea from The Godfather. So the question was, who directed The Godfather? So Ben?
Francis Ford Coppola.
It is. And @sportsfan will be getting that t-shirt in the post. And because our topic on the last episode was top three movie endings, they love the ending to Friday the 13th,
so
which
did
is
I.
a bloody good one. Mm. Was that one of your choices?
It was.
Excellent. So what they said is to win one of the Camp Crystal Lakes, which is a really nice tea. I think it might be one of yours.
Oh, it's going to be.
Big time. We said, who was the killer in Friday the 13th?
Mrs. Voorhees.
It's true. And at Chewymon, we'll be getting that in the post. Bloody good.
Sorry, we're still laughing about Big Time. Big Time.
Richard Sounds came along. They're giving us prizes for the last few months now, and they keep getting bigger and better. And they gave us a Yamaha WX010 music system, which is a bit like a Sonos, so you can stream your music. So all your favourite music. Oh, yeah, much better. And what we said was, what was the best song of all time?
Ooh.
A lot came through, but Jessica Phillips nailed it with Corey Feldman, Go For It.
She's not wrong.
Is that really your favourite song of all time?
Yeah, of course it is.
Of all time?
Of all time, yeah.
Wow.
Of course it is.
I was just testing because it's mine too. I bloody, is it, what's yours?
Of course.
Yeah, it is good.
Yeah, go for it.
Get it, get it.
Funko came along, and they didn't have anything, obviously, they haven't got any Black Klansman Funko, so we couldn't do anything like that. But what they did say, they got some nice new Funkos for some new Rangers, so they came along and gave us a Beetlejuice Funko Pop. Really simple question, who directed the film Beetlejuice?
Tim Burton.
He did, and Andy1188Z on Twitter will be getting that in the post. We also had some Gremlins packs, which were a two-pack of Greta and the Flashing Gremlin, which is awesome, and a vinyl two-pack. And the simple question was, who plays Billy in Gremlins?
Zach Gilligan.
It is. And if you'd like to find out more about his life story,
listen
to his
go.
Interview on Mark and Me. And Helen Dobson won that. Also, and this is a family member, when you hear the answer, Little Shop of Horrors, they've got some really cool Funko Pops. I like that they bring these old stuff out. Definitely. Now. They don't just go with the new stuff.
It's a classic. Have you ever seen the ending that wasn't the original ending?
I haven't.
Oh my, I'm not going to say anything, but watch it.
I won't.
It's fucking dark. You will.
If it's a, what is it, YouTube video for 2 minutes?
Kind of, but...
Too long.
Hey, I got a rewatch later, just remember.
Nice. Who is Seymour played by in the film?
Rick Moranis.
And is he our Uncle Rick?
He's Uncle Rick, yeah.
Brilliant. And Gary Mount got that on email, which is pretty damn good. Should we give some stuff away this time, or should we just not bother?
No, let's just not bother. Let's just keep it to ourselves.
Yeah, imagine that. Let's knock it on the head.
All those compers wouldn't have anything to come on the episode for. We don't want you. But anyway.
We want true fans.
Yes, the real compers. Listeners. Compers. I've seen people on Twitter call themselves compers.
I think I'm going to be sick.
I know. Funko have come along and they've said there isn't any Funko Pops for the new release. I don't think you could get missing ones. That wouldn't really work with it.
No.
So they've given us some Overwatch Funko Pops.
Oh, wow.
Some 4-packs, which have got some really nice ones in. So let's say we'll give 2 packs away and all you need to do is tell us your favourite ever video game. Mm. That would be good.
Okay.
What is yours?
Oh, Streets of Rage 2.
Tetris.
Old school. On the original Game Boy.
On the Game Boy, yeah.
That's amazing. I probably like Earthworm Jim.
Very good.
Nice.
They've also got some Power Rangers exclusive 25th anniversary edition packs of all 4. So shall we say which is your favourite Power Ranger? Really easy.
Yeah.
What's yours?
Was it the pink Power Ranger in the first series?
She was mine too.
Yeah. Was she a babe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She had like a little skirt in her outfit. I like that.
Nice. I don't remember the Power Rangers now. Have you seen the film with Bryan Cranston?
No.
Why did he do that?
Because he played a villain in the original series, so I think it was kind of like a bookend to his career.
There you go. You learn something new every day.
Right.
Because of the popularity of the Gremlins packs, I've asked Sully, and he said he'll give us 2 more sets of both and the 2-pack. So what should we say? What time is it you can't get wet after if you own a Gremlin? Remember that. That's real fans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know Corey Feldman's in that film?
Yeah, he's in everything. He should be.
He should. Richard Sounds have given us some Lindy BNX 60 Bluetooth noise cancelling headphones. They're 5 stars as well. 5 stars in Watt Hi-Fi, so they're going to be some good. Should we make it?
They are going to be some good, John.
Yeah, they're going to be some good.
Not all good.
They're going to be
some good.
Let's say what's your favourite ever movie soundtrack. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Have you seen them be doing this on Twitter now as well? We're doing a few more things.
I noticed.
A bit better. People have to actually reply and not just like and retweet. Last Exit came along and they've given us a couple of t-shirts. As we're masturbating over Quentin in a few moments' time, they've given us a Super Sounds of the 70s tee, which I think you've got, haven't you, Ben?
Yes.
Which is from Reservoir Dogs. Good film. What year did Reservoir Dogs come out? That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And also, is it Hanzo Hattori?
Yep.
Well done.
Or Hattori Hanzo, yeah.
Okay.
It's fine, just got the wrong way around. Yeah. Fine.
From Kill Bill.
Yeah.
Who plays the bride in Kill Bill? Have you got that t-shirt as well?
The Hattori Hanzo one, yeah.
Yeah, dressed like Ben. You could win.
My wardrobe.
Like yeah. They're only going to come in his size and might smell.
Oi, I clean my things.
Only because you haven't washed them, that's all.
I do wash them, though.
No, but real fans would like, if I could get like a piece of t-shirt, like a t-shirt worn by Ryan Gosling.
You want the sweat.
You want the sweat.
You want
like
the perspiration.
Yeah, it's not saying you smell. To enter all the competitions, all you need to do is go on skiptheend.co.uk. On there's our Twitter, our Facebook, our Instagram, and our email. We do get hell of a lot of people win prizes through email. Don't think it's old-fashioned. People still use email. Honestly, we'll announce all the winners in 2 weeks' time, and good luck to everyone.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we talk about our favourite film from a director. On the last episode, we chose Quentin Tarantino. Bloody Quentin, eh?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is big. This is like a really big segment. And I think we're going to have a heck of a lot of fun talking about our favourite film from Quentin. So, Mark, I'm going to throw this to you, my darling. What's your fave?
When you think of Quentin Tarantino, you want a soundtrack. Mm-hmm. You want it all. You want to get home. You want to put on the music. So I've gone with Nothing to Do with That.
Brilliant.
And Inglourious Basterds.
Me too!
2009.
Oh, yes! Wow.
This film, it took a lot. This is my hardest masturbate yet, and I'm being honest. It was two or three that were down to. But I thought, what was my actual favourite film I watched for the first time of his? And because I'd already had the previous films from him that had whet my appetite and knew what to expect, when I heard he was doing a World War II film, I thought, what the fuck? This is mental. Like, I want to see other directors try and take on this, but Tarantino. And then I saw the cast announced. I was like, this is going to be magic. But who's this Christoph Waltz guy? Who in the fuck is this guy? And he should have won an Oscar. I think if
he did.
He did.
Fucking idiot.
If there's ever an Oscar deserved as much as him, what I was going to say was, it should have gone to him, and it did. So
great
I'm really
save.
Glad. I'm glad I did my research. But no, Christoph Waltz, I couldn't believe who he was. I didn't know anything about him. And I thought, this is a risk because he's quite a big part in this film. He blew my mind. He was better than anyone else in that film that have been acting for 10, 20, 30 years. He absolutely stole the show for me. It's a tense film and it gets a lot of grief. When I read the reviews on IMDb, a lot of them are one star. One star, pile of shit, up its own arse, doesn't understand what it's doing, so inaccurate. I didn't care. Mm. I'm on the other end. I'm a 10 out of 10. I think this film is brilliant. It's brutal. The scalping scene at the start sets the tone for the whole film. I think it's absolutely mental, this film, because at times it's cranking up tension like I've never seen, and then suddenly I can be laughing out loud at certain scenes. The dialogue is done to perfection. That's what we love most about Tarantino. The scenes in this film where it's just these guys talking, I'm gripped. Sometimes they go on too long in other films. Hateful Eight was one big fucking dialogue. I was like, fucking shut up. And that's me saying it to Dad. You know, I don't feel proud about saying that. In this, it was right. The language was respectful. We had the German, we had the English, we had the French. It was all done beautifully. The visuals were amazing. The fucking cinematography, absolutely mind-blowing. It is a perfect film. After, I would say just after Christoph Waltz, I think Brad Pitt steals it for me. I think he's fucking awesome in this film. Mm-hmm. Fassbender's brilliant. Everyone is brilliant. There's not one weak link in this whole film. And it is just absolutely brutal. I love it. Everything about it.
I go through phases of deciding what my favourite Tarantino film is, but I think I ultimately always go back to this one. You mentioned who you really enjoy in this film. I especially love Melanie Laurent as Shoshana. I think she's one of my favourite characters of the film. She represents exactly what Tarantino does really well for female characters. Really strong, really resilient. They have to go through this almost like a rite of passage where they're at their absolute lowest ebb in life. I mean, at the beginning of the film, she sees all of her family and friends just slaughtered by the hands of Lander, but her revenge is exact. And it's so brilliant when you think she's going to trap 250 bastard Nazis into a cinema and burn it to the ground. I love that scene when she's tooling up. You got David Bowie with Cat People playing in the background too.
So good.
The red dress, the light shines beautifully over her, and she is a woman that's going to mean business. And I've never been so happier seeing a whole room full of people getting shot and burnt to death. But it is. It's an extraordinary film. It really is. And it's a film that needs to be studied for future generations. I think this is a film that needs to be preserved for future generations of film lovers and film critics and such. So a great film.
It's a masterpiece. It's not my pick, but it was my second choice, mm-hmm. undoubtedly. Instantly, I think of the scene with Lander and the farmer right at the start of the film when he's in the farmhouse. Talk about tension.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you know that those people are under the floorboards. Yeah. And, you know, when you first find out, when you first see them, because Tarantino drops the camera below floorboard level and then we see them hiding out there. Mm-hmm. And then the thing that I always remember from that scene as well is at the end when Lander comes out and he sees Shoshana running off and he says, "Au revoir, Shoshana!"
I love that. Yeah. It was the most fun I've had since we've done Masturbate because it just gave us a chance to go and watch this film again. And it was just so good. And it will be a future rewatch. I'm going to say it now.
Yes. Fabulous.
Even though we spoke about it today, there's so much more we can discuss on this one.
Absolutely.
So it was second for you, was it, dude?
Second, yeah.
So what is your first?
So it was a really tough call, but I have to say Pulp Fiction.
Nice.
Good choice.
Pulp Fiction is in my top five movies of all time, so I would be remiss not to pick it. It was the first time, I would say, that the world was exposed to every aspect of Tarantino's imagination, his twisted, twisted imagination. Obviously, we had Reservoir Dogs prior to this, but that was a more lean, direct, and straightforward film. But Pulp Fiction was pure, unfiltered Tarantino, with all the violent excesses and verbal dexterity that we've come to appreciate from him. It's got some of the greatest performances that he's ever been able to drag out of actors, none more so than Samuel L. Jackson and John Travolta as the weary hitmen Jules and Vincent, and of course Uma Thurman as the alluring Mia Wallace. It's got some of the best set pieces that he's ever done or any director's ever done. Think about Mia's overdose, that whole scene. You know,
horrendous.
Think about the cleanup operation after Marvin gets shot in the head in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Think about Butch and Marcellus Wallace escaping from Zed and the Gimp.
Oh. Yeah, you know, bring out the Gimp.
Bring out the Gimp. Just all these magnificent set pieces just delivered perfectly by Tarantino. It's also got some of his most memorable dialogue. So you've got things like the Royale with Cheese conversation. You've got Pumpkin and Honey Bunny holding up the diner. And then, of course, Jules' legendary "The Path of the Righteous Man" speech before he caps someone in the ass.
It's iconic.
It's absolutely iconic.
All of it is.
Everything, yeah. All those scenes, all those parts of dialogue are iconic within the movie landscape. It's a shocking, hilarious, thrilling, engrossing, disturbing, and downright fucking amazing film, and I love it.
Do you think it's like the definition of what 90s pop culture was all about?
Yeah, I think it's pure zeitgeist, isn't it? It's pure sort of early to mid-90s if you see that film, yeah.
Also, the soundtrack is fucking amazing. You put it on vinyl, haven't you? It's one of those ones you just have to own.
Indeed.
Everything about it. Do you know, with the films we just talked about, there's not one bad thing about those two films.
No.
It's absolute perfection, isn't it?
Yeah.
I would fault anything.
I would give both of them 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hands down.
Yeah.
Hands lander down.
Was this the toughest one for you to try and break it down to from 2 to 1?
Not really. I mean, I kind of had to go with Pulp Fiction because it's in my top five. So the last time we did our top five list, it was in there, and it's always in my top five.
Yeah.
So if I didn't pick it as my favourite of his, I'd have been lying, really.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that tough, but it is a shame to not go with Inglourious Basterds because it's so good. But then again, Django Unchained's fucking amazing.
Yep. Isn't it?
Reservoir Dogs is fucking amazing. Jackie Brown is amazing.
Best soundtrack out of all of them.
Kill Bill's not amazing.
No. Kill Bill 1 is okay.
Kill Bill 2
is whang. Yeah.
And The Hateful Eight, I need to watch again, but I didn't like it.
Can't be arsed.
No.
Shouldn't have to.
Yeah, he's not a bad director.
He's all right, I think he'll do well. Yeah.
What do you think he's doing next? Is it the...
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Mm. I am, although sadly Burt Reynolds died before he filmed his role.
Oh,
that's a shame.
That is gutting.
Yeah, do love a bit of Burt Reynolds.
Rest in peace, Burt.
But yeah, that'll be great. I mean, the cast is insane. Brad Pitt, Leo DiCaprio.
Is Margot Robbie
in it? Robbie's in it, yeah. It's Timothy Oliphant's in it. It's going to be superb.
Have you seen the photos?
No, I'm trying to avoid stuff. I don't want to see too much.
Have a look at Leonardo DiCaprio in a 70s-esque turtleneck.
Oh, I have seen that,
And a suit.
Yeah.
Oh, mama jama.
He looks good. Right then, what's come through on social media?
Oh, as you are, as I'm sure you'll not be surprised to hear, it was one of our busiest we've ever had on Movie Masturbate. We had Kelly Cable on Twitter, at Kelly Cable, has said, "How can I pick only one? It's like you're asking me who my favourite child is. But if you're twisting my arm, I'll say Pulp Fiction."
Nice.
The others can suck
For a minute
it.
Then, I thought she called her son Pulp Fiction.
That would have been great. That's a good name. Yeah.
Pulp Fiction, will you leave, bloody...
Will you leave Reservoir Dogs alone?
Yes, I've told you twice.
On Facebook, Martin White said, "Jackie Brown, of course, but I'm one of the biggest Tarantino fanboys, so I love all of his movies in different ways."
Nice.
On Twitter, Tom Joe Wood, at Tom Joe Wood, said, "I have to say Kill Bill Volume 1. I watched it in a film studies class, and it just stood out unlike other films I've seen."
Yep.
Paul at Zombie Dead 1981. I think I'm one of the few that loved Death Proof.
Oh, yeah. He's the one.
Yeah. The dialogue was awesome. The action scenes were kick-ass. And it's got Dad in.
Yeah.
True.
I probably need to watch it again because I remember it being shit. Mm. But then Planet Terror was so much better and more fun. Yeah. So maybe if I watch them again, they might be better.
Yeah, it might be. Probably not, though. On Facebook, Jessica Lee Simpson has said Reservoir Dogs. Tim Roth's death scene is one of the greatest in cinema history.
Can't argue with that.
Indeed. On Twitter again, TV and movie Matt, at Matt Lightrabbit, said has to be Inglourious Basterds. That opening scene is so intense, plus Fassbender's mistake with the German numbers is great.
And you do it, Mark.
Yes.
You do a German 3.
Yeah, I remember we brought this up on an episode once, didn't we?
Yeah, if we're trying to do a review wrap-up for a score, Mark will say, you know, if it's 8 or 7. And whenever he does 8, it always throws me because it looks like a 7.
There we go.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, you're a German.
You're a German.
Look at my eyes.
Using your thumb like a German. Look at your bloody blonde hair.
I know. Aryan.
Blonde. You heard that.
Strawberry blonde.
Oh, you heard that.
Strawberry blonde.
There we go. On Skip to the End, episode 104, I'm officially blonde. Yes!
It's only because you dyed it. You had
just,
enough.
That's just for men. I'm blonde.
Johnny Edwards at Johnny Hoppus has said Hateful Eight. It's a dialogue-based masterpiece with an unforgettable score and a tremendous cast that delivers a real sense of tension. An absolute thriller.
Nice.
I love the score from Hateful Eight.
On Facebook, Daniel Christie. Gotta be Django Unchained for me, one of my favourite films ever, and in my opinion, Samuel L. Jackson and Leonardo DiCaprio's best performances. I wouldn't disagree with that, actually. I think that probably is their best performances.
It's that or Snakes on a Train. Plane.
That's not a film.
Snakes on a Train. Snakes on a
That's the sequel.
I guarantee if you Googled Snakes on a Train, they would have made it. Probably. It would be some fucking straight-to-DVD shite. Snakes on a Boat.
It's like, you know when like you talk to like your nan, it's like, have you seen that Snakes on a Train?
No,
I love that.
That's not what it's called, Nan. Yeah. You've got it wrong again.
Snakes on a what? On a car?
I'm a grandma, wow.
And then finally, Hal at the Bozdog has said, are we forgetting his masterpiece of direction within his segment of Four Rooms? Oh, we are? Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Have you seen Four Rooms?
No.
You know, are you familiar with it?
No.
It was a film that Tarantino did with three other kind of indie directors in the 90s, and it's set in this hotel, hence Four Rooms, and it's linked together by a bellhop, I think played by Tim Roth, who flits in and out of the four, and so Tarantino directs one segment, and I think maybe Robert Rodriguez directs one. I can't remember who the other three directors are, but it's not good.
It sounds wank.
It is, yeah.
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 Keep it going. Keep it going, thanks.
Do you want to hear some utterly unscientific analysis based on me going through all the social media responses? Jackie Brown was the most popular one we had.
Are you kidding me?
We had hundreds of responses across all forms of social media. Jackie Brown undoubtedly was the most popular, with Pulp Fiction second.
Wow.
Death Proof was surprisingly popular. A lot of people saying Death Proof. And we did not have a single vote for Kill Bill Part 2. It was the only one of his films that no one voted for.
Good.
Yeah. I mean, that's life, really.
Keep
it that way.
Wow.
Oh, is it my turn to pick out the pot?
It
feels like a while since you've took one out.
I know, yeah. Can I have a drum roll, please?
Yes.
Push can.
Good luck topping Quentin.
Yeah. So on episode 105, we will be masturbating over Oliver Stone.
Oh. Nice! It's now time for the rewatch, and if you listened to our last episode, you'd have heard our announcement that we're watching Rebel Without a Cause from 1955. I think it might be the oldest film we've ever seen.
Quite possibly. On the podcast.
Yes. It's a bit like Mir in La La Land. I don't think any of us have seen this before.
No.
So we're all going in completely dry.
Yes.
I'm very intrigued, but just before we get into it, I'll give you a brief summary of what it's about. A rebellious young man with a troubled past comes to a new town finding friends and enemies. It stars the famous James Dean, iconic actor who unfortunately died before this film opened in the cinema, which is pretty sad.
Yeah.
We're all going in dry. I'm very intrigued. I kind of wish we'd seen this at the Rialto Theatre, don't you, Gemma?
Definitely.
Would have been really nice.
Aww.
Now, I don't know who to... Do you know what? I don't know who to give this to first. It's a funny one. I'm going to just give it to Ben. Tell me what you thought from your very first viewing of Rebel Without a Cause. The film, before I say, inspired Tommy Wiseau to make The Room, so you better love it.
Yeah. I loved James Dean's performance, and we'll talk about that in detail as we get through, but I didn't really care for the film, I'll be honest with you. What was shocking in 1955 just isn't shocking now. You know, having knife fights and races to the death is just probably a Wednesday night to teenagers these days. So it just doesn't feel that shocking. Like at the time, some countries refused to release it, or it was given an X rating in the UK with certain edits and stuff, and now it's kind of, it just feels really tame, but well made and well acted. But yeah, it didn't blow me away.
Okay, brilliant. And Gemma?
Well, first thing is, it does explain why Tommy Wiseau is the way he is, because a lot of mannerisms we see in The Room is of course reflected in Rebel Without a Cause from James Dean. But I believe that he gives such a timeless performance that seems to be incredibly influential, even when you watch today's films. Tommy Wiseau, for example. And I think it conveys a message that was way ahead of its time, like you mentioned just a moment ago. Juvenile delinquency is, of course, extremely different to what we're in today. But it almost has a weird sense of innocence to it, because there is no phones, there's no technology. It actually, like you said, it does seem tame. But I think that's what draws me to it. I had a really good time watching this, and I can't believe it's taken me this long to watch a film that is apparently one of the most important coming-of-age films of all times. I really enjoyed it. I really did enjoy it.
Brilliant. So again, we're not on the same page today. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. It's one of the best coming-of-age films I've seen in a long time, and it makes me realise how different films are now. Mm. Probably for the better for you, Ben. I bet you're glad. Yeah. We've got CGI, and we've got decent films and decent directors and stuff. But I think it was really well done for 19... I kept thinking, this is not 1955. Yeah. It is all about James Dean. You know, it's so sad that we got, what, 3 films out of him, which is just depressing. And now I want to go and watch the other two. Mm-hmm. He is one of the best kind of actors I've seen in the business. I thought he was absolutely unbelievable from start to finish. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant performance. You can see why everyone fancied him. He's a good-looking chap.
God,
and that red jacket, he looked bloody good.
Breathtaking.
And that whole line of, "You're tearing me apart!" You just couldn't take it seriously, could you? No, you couldn't.
I laughed, and I rewound it twice to laugh at it again.
But it is what cinema's all about. And if you think of your grandparents who may have gone and seen this in the cinema, this is what it's all about. The music, the 50s is iconic. The outfits, everything about it. It's just beautiful. And they don't make films like this anymore.
They don't.
Bloody brilliant.
I think the thing that sold Dean for me in this particular film is when he goes back and confesses to his parents that he was involved in that race that led to his friend or his enemy's death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was one of the most powerful pieces of acting I've seen, because he's trying to bare his soul, but they're not understanding where he's coming from. They don't understand what he's trying to do. So he keeps blowing up and getting angry, but then kind of calming down and getting introspective again. It's amazing. It's what, maybe a 5-6 minute scene?
Yeah.
It's all him. The focus is on him, and it's extraordinary.
I love the balance between the parents and him, and you see the power shifts throughout the whole film. Mm. And I think it's reflected, and kudos to Mark Kermode for pointing this out in Secrets of Cinema. The camera is at a Dutch angle, so you get the illusion that the parents are at the hierarchy, whereas Jim, James Dean's character, is at the bottom. But then every now and again, they'll sort of, I wouldn't say dance, but they move onto the positioning of the stairs. So then at one point, Jim is above his parents, and his parents are obviously at a scale where it's slightly lower. It's understanding what teenagers are going through. And when you think about it, when you're a teenager, Christ, your hormones are like having a party inside and you haven't got a frigging clue what's going on. But as you grow up, obviously you learn more about the world, you learn more about yourself, and then you too would probably get frustrated with somebody younger than you going, "What are you doing?" And it's just this one big vicious circle. Jim's character probably goes through this with his kids later on in life. And how can you convey exactly how you feel when you don't even know what's going on inside you? And the rot, the turmoil that Jim has throughout the film, I was transfixed.
I believed every single word he said on every bit of his performance. I never looked at him and thought, you haven't quite delivered it. He was absolutely, it's a bit like Heath Ledger, taken too soon. And you're just gutted. Yeah. You're just sitting there thinking, where would he have been with another 20 years? Because he's not old. You know what I mean?
It's
not
like he was 24 when he died.
Fucking hell. Yeah. It's heartbreaking.
It felt like he wasn't afraid to really go for it, like really explore that side of him that is probably at his most vulnerable. And I found it to be really raw, like really sort of beyond any actor's capabilities. Like, you're either born with it or you have to go through lessons, and you still never get to that glory stage of your career. He didn't hide anything.
No.
Yeah, I read some stuff about him having blow-ups on set with the director, yes. Nicholas Ray, because Dean was a method actor. He'd be so deep into his performance, and then the director would call cut, and he'd go off on him saying, you know, don't call cut when I'm in the middle of something, when I'm really building something mm-hmm. and getting somewhere, because he was so fucking deep into the role. It's extraordinary. Yeah. The thing that I didn't really buy was that he was meant to be a teenager. Even though he was sort of circa 23 when he made this film, he looked about 35, and he was playing what was, I think, supposed to be a 16-year-old. So I didn't buy him as a teenager. Major, to be honest.
But I'm always getting told I look in my early 20s.
Bullshit.
That's fair enough, but I didn't mind. I could switch off. I know we're going to sit here and always talk about James Dean, but what about Natalie Wood as Judy? Because I thought she was absolutely unbelievable on screen.
Yeah.
The chemistry was just...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they had an instant connection, attraction. I like that she wasn't this damsel in distress when we first met her. She was actually a bit of an arsehole when you think about it. Her boyfriend Buzz is part of the bullies at school, and they start ripping on Jim for no reason. All because he asked if she wanted to live from school, and she's like, "You live from school?"
I don't think she delivered a line like that, but she's been clueless.
Yeah, but she was,
as
you know,
if.
But you would automatically expect a film of that era where women are inferior to men, you'd expect her to say, "Oh, absolutely," just, you know, and then start following him around. But he had to work for her. Didn't help the fact that she was a bit of a bastard.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why he was interested, because she just sat and smiled when Buzz stabbed James Dean's car tyres.
Exactly.
He stabbed the car tyres and then stabbed him, and she's still laughing about it. So if I was him, I'd have walked away. I'd have found someone better.
Yeah.
But another interesting thing that I read is when they were looking to cast this film, she wasn't the studio's first pick, because she'd been a child actor from like the age of 5, and she was known as like a little goody two-shoes. So the studio didn't think she was right for playing this delinquent character. But then one night she went out on the piss with Dennis Hopper, who is in the film as one of the baddies you see him lurking in the background. They went out, got drunk, and got into a car crash. And then in the hospital, one of the doctors referred to her as being a juvenile delinquent, and she said to the director, "There, see, I am one. So cast me in the film." He's like, "Yeah, good enough." And that's how he put her in.
So if you want to get in a film, be involved in a car crash. Yeah.
There we go.
But not if you're James Dean, because that kind of ends the parts.
Yeah. That car race scene, I do want to say, looked absolutely awesome. The adrenaline and everything behind it. I know when he leaves the car, it looked a bit ridiculous, but it's 1950s. You can't do CGI and do stuff like Fast and Furious. But I thought that looked fucking brilliant. So well shot. It gave me kind of goosebumps watching it, and I just thought, this is brilliant. For 1950s, it looked great.
I'll tell you what I thought looked brilliant was when, right near the start of the film, when they went to the planetarium,
and
they were showing all the stars and the explosions. So I was like, that's really quite high-tech shit for 1955.
Yeah. That was the master of colour for me. You could sit, and this is what we see in La La Land when they go and visit it, but it's beautiful. So, so good. And I'm like, how is this 70 years old?
I know. And that's, I think this film was the movie that popularised using that Griffith Observatory as a film location. So as you say, it's used in La La Land, it's used in The Terminator, Transformers, it's been in TV shows, it was an episode of Lucifer last season. It gets everywhere. It's one of the most famous landmarks in LA now.
I want to go there.
Me too.
Should we get married there?
Skip trip!
To one another or to
me
other people?
You.
Okay.
Yeah, wicked.
It's legal now, it's legal, that's fine.
Skip trip and we come back and marry. But I'd love to get married there. It's a great venue, but I bet they don't do weddings there.
I bet they probably do if you pay them enough.
I think so.
Oh, that's something to consider. Yeah. I'm going to get married again.
I'll have a look at the fees. We'll get some buns together. And I had a problem with the character of Plato.
See, this is what was on a lot of the reviews. He's Marmite.
He's Denny, is what
he is.
you can see that Tommy Wiseau was modelled Denny on Plato.
Oh, hi, Plato. But he's quite a weird and disturbing character. I mean, when we're first introduced to him in the police station, it's discovered that he murders puppies.
Yeah.
Which is pretty fucking dark for the 50s. And he just, obviously, he wanted to have a father figure to look up to, and he made Jim that figure for his life. And it was a bit creepy when, obviously, Jim and, obviously, Natalie Wood's character, Judy, when they all of a sudden become, like, this kind of family. It's charming enough, it's quite quirky, but I think Plato kind of takes it a little bit too seriously. Yeah, I was on the fence with him, if I'm honest.
Apparently, James Dean, the director Nicholas Ray, and the writer Stuart Stern all agreed that Plato was going to be gay, and that he clearly had sexual feelings.
Yeah. Very clear indications.
But because of the Hollywood production code at the time, you couldn't show homosexuality on screen, so he had to be basically a closeted or hidden gay person. But there are parts where you see him looking at him longingly. You know,
adoring.
He's clearly into him. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can just tell. You can just feel it. I probably would be like that with James Dean on set. You just look that cool. He looks so iconic. That red jacket, he looks so iconic. And I think that's the director's decision to give you the focus. Not like in kind of Schindler's List by singling out a character in a red outfit, but it gives you that same thing. You were drawn to him yeah. all the time, and I think that was done on purpose.
Yeah, because you think about the group of bullies, they all kind of look very similar and the same. They're wearing the same colour scheme, yep. they've got the same haircuts, whereas Jim sticks out like a sore thumb, and he's intriguing, he's different. That's why yeah. the kids are picking on him, mm-hmm. because he's not like them. But I'd rather hang out with that kid than yeah. those bunch of drones any absolutely. Day of the week.
One of the things that made me chuckle in this film, because it was the only thing in the film that I would consider shocking, yeah. and it shows you how old and how times have changed. It's when Jim is bemoaning the fact that his dad doesn't stand up to his mum, and he says, "If only he'd have the guts to knock her out cold just once." And it wasn't like a winking, noddy comment. No. It was like, he meant that. He meant, yeah, just give her a good slap and yeah. she'll be fine.
Spark her.
So that was fine in 1955. Not so much now.
No, not in 2018.
One stone cold stunner to your mum and she'll realise for life. So if you're listening. One thing I want to say, and this is what I think's changed in cinema, and this is one of the noticeable things which now when we watch any film at the cinema we don't have, is the music throughout. So we have this score playing throughout the whole 2 hours, and it's beautiful. It's I love stunning. The iconic music we get in this film. It's from the beginning, but we have this background score that whenever they're talking, especially when Jim and Judy are together and they're lying down, that music in the background adds so much, and they don't get that in cinema anymore. Yeah. And I think it's a lost art, because that's what makes me think of this classic yeah. cinema genre of these 50s and 60s, and that's what we had a lot in La La Land, and I think it sucks. It doesn't
Psycho.
Work in everything.
Psycho is like that as well.
Psycho is a great one, yeah. All the way through. Yeah. Not like that.
It's not like a cat being murdered.
But that'd really put the tension.
But it's a lost art, and I think it works yeah. so well. It adds so much to that thing, and why don't we do it anymore?
I think some composers and film score creators do try and do it, but it's a very difficult balance, because what you don't want it to be is overbearing.
Yeah.
You don't want to get annoyed at a film because there's constant music. It has to be subtle.
And I get that.
And I think people are still doing it. I just think it's the art of subtlety that's not quite
yeah.
as it used to be.
Yeah.
Maybe we should put on an episode of us with music in the background, yeah. just like Cemetery Piss, but all the way through. Yeah, that'd be quite good. But I didn't get distracted, did you guys? I thought it
no,
worked.
No. I thought it worked very well.
Added another dimension.
I think it took me to that age of like the golden era of Hollywood, where you know it's not romanticising any particular area of the film, but it really does take you away from a world that you're not familiar with. It transports you into a Hollywood film, because this is a Hollywood film.
Yeah.
And simple as that.
You can see how La La Land has literally took so many elements from it. And
it
works.
It.
Yeah, homage. That's the way we don't get in trouble from Damien. But yeah.
Do you know what's pretty fucked? The fact that the three leads, the three main kids in this, all died young.
Yeah.
So we know that obviously James Dean died in a car crash at age of 24.
Yeah.
And then Salmoneo, who played Plato, he was murdered at the age of 37.
Oh my Bloody God. Hell.
And then Natalie Wood died of drowning and suspected foul play at the age of 43.
Mm-hmm.
There's some films that just cursed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just that is a shame.
Was it The Exorcist that's supposed to have a curse about
yes.
it?
Yes, yeah. Poltergeist too.
Poltergeist,
yeah. Well, if you're on the set of some certain bit, I think you just killed yourself or something. That's not what anything.
Sounds like The Happening.
And I think there's a scene that if you pause it, you can see someone hanging in the background or something
that's
like
that. That's The Wizard of Oz, and but it's
definitely not true.
Yeah. It's definitely not true.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Take it with a pinch of salt. But overall then, so we all went in dry. I think we've all had good stuff to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely. I think, should we score it?
Yeah.
I think so.
So Ben, I started with you. You love James Dean, but not the film so much. So what's your...
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a really interesting watch. I'm glad to have seen it as an artifact of old Hollywood. So I did enjoy it from that respect. But the film didn't really grab me. So it's a 6 for me.
Okay.
Gemma?
I absolutely loved it, and I understand the importance of what it plays in cinema history. I really want to see it again. It's a 9 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, how's that?
Really, really enjoyed it.
I'm going to agree. I thought it was fucking awesome. Mm. I just regret not seeing it. You know, if they play the Prince Charles, I want to go.
Oh,
I want to go
too.
And see it on the big screen in a proper theatre, sit there waiting, like they do on La La Land. Mia will walk in
a green
dress.
Oh my God, what if Emma Stone went up on the screen? Like, ah!
Yeah, like, get out of the way, I can't see, for fuck's sake. And then as soon as we watch it, it will burn out.
Yeah.
So 9, 9 and 6.
Call it an 8.
An 8, yeah. So Rebel Without a Cause gets a skip to the end, 8 out of 10, which is a bloody good rating for the first time.
It's great.
So whose rewatch choice is it next?
It's my rewatch choice next. Okay, guys. I love a big classic film, and this one packs a punch. And I hope it doesn't knock us out. Because, guys, we've got to make sure we've got the Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah! Oh.
On the next episode, our rewatch is Rocky!
Woo! It's that time you've all been waiting for. A brand new game show for all of you to enjoy. And hopefully play along at home. I like the idea of people shouting out random names and stuff.
Yeah.
So, just like Judith in a flat going, like, just, Tom Hanks!
Why Judith?
Because Judith is an avid listener.
Yes, she's one of our most valuable listeners.
Valuable.
But anyway, what we need to do is describe how this game show is going to work. And I think we need a name. Yeah?
Yeah.
So we're going to come to that. I'm going to describe the game and I'm going to ask you to give me a name on the spot.
Okay.
I've not been lazy, honest. What we're going to do is I've got a list of 100 actors and actresses printed out.
Okay.
So there you go, guys. You can see them there. Oh, on cards. Yeah. Right, pack of cards.
He's not lying.
Each one has got an actor or actress, okay, written down. Not the character or anything like that, just an actor. So it could say Robert De Niro, for example.
Yeah.
And what you're going to do as a team is have 2.5 minutes each to describe them or one of their characters in the films that they star in, okay? So that's quite easy.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't make it that easy because you could say, who did I just give an example
of? Robert De Niro.
Robert De Niro. You could say, it's not Rocky, it's the other one.
Yeah.
And then it'd be like Bullwinkle, his most iconic performance.
Obviously.
So what we're going to do is we're going to make it a bit more difficult. You can't actually say the characters' names in the film.
Okay.
You can't say any of the actors' names that are in the film alongside them.
Right.
You can't say the actual films that they star in.
Okay.
You can't say the co-stars' names or any of their catchphrases.
Oh, Lord.
So all you're going to be doing is describing the actual character that they play.
But or themselves.
Or themselves.
Or themselves.
Okay.
But the good thing about this is these actors have been in a lot of films. There's a lot of stuff to choose from. I think 2.5 minutes is about right, but I want you both to have a go as a team, because if Ben nails it and you're shit, that ain't fair.
That ain't happening.
So we're going to switch it round.
Okay.
So What do you want to be called? Team Bemmer?
Team Bemmer again, yeah.
Team Bemmer, okay. So what we'll do is you'll have 2.5 minutes and then we'll switch it and you'll have 2.5 minutes to describe.
Okay.
Okay.
Is everyone happy?
Yes.
I guess.
We do need a name. I should have probably come up with one. Anything on the top of your head?
Oh, yeah. Let's call it the Actor Factor.
The actor. There we go. There we go. Fuck the X Factor. It's all about the Actor Factor. So what I'm going to do on my Apple iPhone...
Oh, yeah.
Which has a great timer. I'll be honest, this phone is fucked at the moment. When I try and do stuff on Bluetooth and stuff, it doesn't work. So if you want to send me a new iPhone, that'd be great.
Yeah.
You're going to have 2 minutes 30. I'm not going to be an arsehole, okay? So
where have we heard that before?
It's going to be 1 point for everyone you get right.
Okay.
If you get it wrong or anything, you can pass. You don't lose any points.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Are you ready to start?
Yes, am I good to describe for the first 2.5 minutes?
Do you want to?
Yep, I'll do it, go on.
Okay.
Your time starts now.
He's in the MCU, big Australian bugger, blonde.
Oh, Chris Hemsworth.
Correct.
Yes.
Used to be married to Madonna.
Oh, Sean Penn.
Correct.
Oh.
This is good. Two already.
She was part of my sexual awakening when she walked in a red dress.
Oh, Cameron Diaz.
Correct.
How do I know
Brilliant.
That?
Many, many people's sex.
Oh, Lord. He, in his most recent film, had a terrific moustache.
Oh, my.
He's English, but plays a lot of Americans.
Oh, Henry Cavill. No. Jim, no.
Jim.
Oh, Henry Christ. Cavill.
Pass. It was Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, bollocks.
Fuck. The one you just said.
Henry Cavill.
Yep.
Am I going to allow that?
Of course you are.
Yeah. Okay. He's an Oscar winner for playing a blind musician.
Oh, Jamie Foxx.
Correct.
Mm.
4 points so far, guys, and you've had nearly a minute.
Another member of the MCU was also a very funny man. Lost a lot of weight to get into the MCU.
Chris Pine.
No, but you're on the right lines.
Oh, man.
It's not Chris Pine.
Oh, Chris Pratt.
Correct.
Yes, 5 points so far.
Was a huge star in the 70s. His star started to fade until Tarantino put him in a film in 1994.
Oh Christ. John Travolta.
Correct.
Yes. Ben is fucking good at this, by the way. 6 points.
Rubber-faced comedic
Jim
actor.
Carrey.
Correct.
7 points.
Most famous method actor on earth.
Robert De Niro.
No.
Fuck my life.
English, English-Irish, I think he is.
Oh, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah.
Brilliant. 8 points. 1 minute left.
The one you just said.
Fuck, Robert De Niro.
Yep.
Fuck you. This is unfair. 9 points.
Welsh actor. If you wanted to know more about him, you could listen to an episode of Mark and Me.
Oh, Chris. Brian Blessed.
No, Welsh actor.
Oh, fuck.
He's been doing TV recently, a very good TV show on HBO.
Oh, shit.
He's played murderers. He's also in the MCU. He plays the dad of the other person I mentioned at the start.
Oh, wait, hang on. Chris Hemsworth. Oh, Anthony Hopkins.
Correct.
Oh, my God.
Available now on iTunes.
Oh, shut up.
10 points with 30 seconds to go.
Was known for doing shitty rom-coms, but then had a bit of a renaissance.
Oh,
won an Oscar.
Matthew McConaughey.
Correct.
Oh, my God, yes.
11, 20 seconds left.
I think she was the first black woman to win a Best Actress Oscar.
Oh, Halle Berry.
Correct.
Mm. Brilliant.
Comedian killed himself.
Oh, Robin Williams.
Correct.
Fucking hell. 13 points, 10 seconds to go.
Scottish actor, no matter what character he plays, they've always got a Scottish accent. Retired.
Sean Connery.
Correct.
Mm.
an actor that we routinely take the piss out of. Can we finish? Can Gemma still
I'm
guess
gonna
on
let
this
let you have this. Remember that.
It's a character we routinely take the piss out of, and when we used to do the Skippy Awards, he used to win most of them.
It's Adam Sandler.
Correct.
Correct.
Well done.
Thank you.
How many did I get?
15.
Oh, that's pretty good.
That's bloody good.
Oh my God.
How
this
is it?
This is fun. Right. I like this, yeah.
Right, now watch Gemma completely fuck it. Are you comfortable?
I'm comfortable.
So, let's have a breather. Come on, that was, have a bit of... What's that?
I'm drinking gin now.
He's on the fucking gin. That was tense, just sitting here. But I liked it, it's good.
It's good.
Basically
good.
Pictionary.
It is, but I now have very sweaty pits.
Are you ready?
Kinda.
Your time starts now.
Okay. He plays a lot of douchebags in films. Has a busy mate with another actor in
Ben
one
Affleck.
And yep, there we go.
One.
His brother used to be in a boy band. Has a very confused look in a lot of his films. Runs away from plants in a film in particular.
Mark Wahlberg.
Yep. Has a very wide-eyed face. Hits women in bear outfits in a remake.
Nicolas Cage.
Yep. He's a foreign actor. We saw him recently in a particular film a few months ago.
That's not too niche.
It's a hard one pass, if
okay.
That's all right.
Who was it?
Benicio del Toro.
Ah, tough.
Yeah. Irish guy, played a villain in a particular MCU film that bombed with a fellow douchebag we mentioned not long ago. Kills dwarves in Belgium cities.
Oh, Christ. Colin Farrell.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Thank you. She's quite annoying. Mark thinks she's quite annoying, but she, she won an Oscar and then fell over as she was accepting that
Jennifer
particular
Lawrence.
Award. Yep.
Well annoying.
I know, you do not
well
like
done.
Her. British guy, I think he's about to be in a brand new MCU film coming up in March time.
Jude Law.
Yeah.
Well done.
Fat guy, but lost a load of weight.
Kevin Smith.
No.
He's not an actor, is he?
Lost a load of weight and then he's put it back on. And then he's also going to be in a Netflix show.
Jonah
in a few
Hill.
Months. Yep.
Jonas Hill.
Yep. A person you would love to punch his face in, hamburger face.
He
was...
Jared Leto.
Yep. Likes to play on a big keyboard when he was a kid.
Tom Hanks.
Yep.
Nice.
Good clue, Gemma.
We all love him. He's the greatest actor of our generation.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yep.
Brilliant.
He's in the MCU again. Had bad times in the early 90s, but then he rose like a phoenix from the ashes. Dabbled in a bit of drugs. But,
Robert Downey Jr.
The most boring actor in the world had a massive flop in a world where there was a lot of liquid fluid substance.
Oh, Kevin Costner.
Yeah, nice. Really boring.
30 seconds.
We love her. Mark met her and gave her a high five at the BAFTAs.
Frances McDormand.
Yep. Nice. Yep.
We think she's really, really bland. Shaved her head for a film like with lots of songs and musicals in it. And she won an Oscar at some point. She's really bland, though. Pass.
Anne
Hathaway.
Oh.
There's nothing exciting. Oh, we bloody love him. Likes to bowl and wear a dressing gown.
Jeff Bridges.
Yep.
5 seconds.
He's a really... Oh, rewatch next episode.
Sylvester Stallone.
Yes! The guy that Mark can't say his name before we went on air.
Your time's up.
Well, I didn't hear the beep.
No, I didn't either.
It did.
We can take that. Do you remember before? Do you remember before we recorded and Mark said a particular actor's name and he got it wrong? What's the correct term?
I can't remember what he said.
Your time is up. You're not.
All right then.
Viggo Mortensen.
Oh shit!
Right, guys. He said Vito Mortensen.
Vito.
Vito.
How many do you think you got?
I got a lot.
You both got 15 each.
Oh, high fives all round, Pooch.
30.
That's pretty good.
Hell of a fucking score.
Beat that, motherfucker.
How did it feel? Tense.
That was great fun.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I'm going to
awesome.
Need to keep these. I'm going to be quizmaster next time.
Nice.
And I'm going to keep the ones that we've said so that I don't repeat them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So a score of 30, I think, is bloody good.
Yeah.
It was
very tense. I think it's good for the listeners.
Good.
So should we do a round two?
Go on then.
So Ben's going to be the games master and it'll be Team Memma.
Team Memma.
Or Gark.
Team Gark.
Team Gark.
Team Gark.
Stay tuned for that in 2 weeks' time.
It's that time of the show. Skip to the recommend. That's when we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now, and we want you to enjoy it.
Two.
Don't join in, mate.
Oh my god.
This ain't Sing Along with Ben.
I was dancing as well.
I'm a solo act here, pal.
Riding on your coattails.
Do you know what I mean?
But you have to admit, you enjoy it. We all dance.
We do all
this,
dance.
We all dance at
we
that
do,
point.
Yeah.
I think we should toast to how well Ben did that.
Well done, Ben.
So, thanks. Cheers.
There we go. Some more brother cider.
I'm still on the gin. I'll have a brother's chaser.
Ooh, lady
boy. What are we doing? What are we doing? Skip the recommend.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely.
Now we've introduced it. Yeah. Might as well do it. Right, so we all know how this bit works. Mark, I'm going to throw it out to you first. What's your recommendation this time round?
I'm going for an album.
Ooh.
It's the 10th album from the band Thrice, who have just brought out a brand new album, as you're listening to this yesterday, called Palms. And in my opinion, it's probably their strongest album yet, which is a huge statement. One of my favourite bands of all time, by far. Dustin's vocals, you need to get involved. If you've not heard Thrice, seriously, they are life-changing. They'll come into your life, you'll listen to them and go, a bit heavy for me. And you'll listen to something else and be like, this is so dynamic, this is like Radiohead. They never, ever rest on their... laurels.
Well done.
Finally.
Because what they do is they establish themselves as this like emo rock band 20 years ago, and they're still the original lineup now, which that's credit.
It's unheard of, really.
Yeah, like not like Soulfly.
No.
And the thing is, it's because of the time, they had to be this metal band that were new metal. We saw them at Download recently. They're not metal anymore.
No.
They've established themselves as this rock act that can do really chilled stuff. They've done a whole EP of acoustic stuff. They've done electric stuff. And the album that they've just released out now, Palms, is a mix of the best of. It's like you've got elements of the early stuff. You've got new stuff that's completely different. It's just got synths and it reminds me of like an 80s John Carpenter soundtrack. The songs I want to point out are My Soul, which is absolutely unbelievable. It just blew me away. But my favourite is Beyond the Pines. This song itself finishes the album and I've never heard a vocal melody like it. Dustin's vocals along with Tepi's guitar is... I just can't describe. I put my headphones on, listen, I just want to cry. It's that good. It's just absolutely... It gets... You know when music can be too powerful sometimes? When a new album... You listened to Queens of Stone Age again the other day and you fell in love completely with them again and in a whole new light. It just... It's too much sometimes. And I put these headphones on, I listened to it the first time. I was with my friend, I showed it her and she was literally nearly crying. We're both like, this is fucking unbelievable, isn't it? And this album will change your life. And I'm sure, even if you're like, well, I don't really like that style of music, you'll respect it.
Mm.
Ben, when you saw them and I bigged them up and I'd be like, you've got to listen to Thrice, you've got to listen to Thrice.
Yeah.
They were great, weren't they?
I really enjoyed them live,
And the bass sound was really kind of one of the pinnacle parts of their live set that kind of set them aside.
I like some of their songs are kind of Deftones-y. I like those kind of songs that they do.
You have to listen to them because whenever we drive anywhere, I'm like, right.
I know all of the songs off by heart because they're always on in your car.
Sorry about that. But the album has just come out. It's a really, really good album. It's only 10 tracks. It'll be on Spotify. Go and have a listen because I do believe you'll absolutely love them. And Gemma, I know you're not massively into too much heavy.
Yeah, but I'm into it.
Yeah, you'll enjoy the stuff on this album. It's so melodic and Dustin's vocals are just...
And didn't you get a pre-release copy of the album?
I did.
And why is that, Mark?
On the latest Mark and Me, which is out now on iTunes, I actually interview Dustin and talk all about the making of the album Palms.
Well, there you go.
So it's like I bought this just to try and promote that. But yeah, I listened to the album about 4 weeks ago and he did tell me exclusively that they are going to come to the UK next year. So we'll have to all go on a skip trip.
Let's do it.
We won't get married, not on this one. Oh. We'll just go and enjoy the gig. But yeah, recommend anything by them, to be honest. But the recommendation itself is for Palms, the brand new album.
Cool.
Excellent. Gemma, what have you got?
Gone for a song.
A solitary song.
And I would like to thank at Guna Armstrong on Twitter for this because he tweeted me a few evenings ago on Twitter and he said, are you aware of this? And I wasn't. I clicked on the link and I listened to the song all 3 minutes and 21 seconds and I fell in love. Tom York, Suspirium.
Oh, it's a great tune.
Mm-hmm. You just mentioned a moment ago about how a song can really move you. And this completely stopped my tracks. And for that 3 minutes and 21 seconds, the world simply just stopped. So Tom York is most known for being a frontman of Radiohead, one of my all-time favourite bands.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also the man that's going to be responsible for scoring the latest remake of Suspiria. That was originally directed by Dario Argento. The previous soundtrack for the original Suspiria was scored by Goblin. They're a very prog rock Italian band.
Yeah.
So with Tom York scoring the brand new remake of this, it gets me very, very excited. He's probably taken some fellow tips from Johnny Greenwood.
Yeah.
A fellow Radiohead band member who's done You Were Never Really Here, The Master, Phantom Thread, There Will Be Blood.
Basically does all of Paul
he's
Thomas
so
Anderson's
pretty
films
much,
now.
Yeah.
So good at what he does.
Yeah. But this is a piece of music that is classy and bewitching at the same time. And York just adds this haunting melancholy to his vocals. it's somewhat soothing, but it's also incredibly eerie when you listen to it. And I think that fits the whole universe of Suspiria really, really well. And the piano melody kind of just floats during the whole duration with this retro flute at the end of the song. And it gets me thinking, if this is the first pre-release track from Suspiria, what the hell is the rest of the album going to be like? It's going to be godsmack. It's going to be packing such a supernatural wallop that it's a great hint of what's to come. But in the meantime, if you are a big fan of Thom Yorke, you know, hopefully you guys should know about The Eraser and Tomorrow's Modern Boxes. But in the meantime, this song is going to juice your appetite for the soundtrack for next month, and I am so excited for it.
Well, well, well.
So much music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, Ben.
I'm going with a wrestling show.
Yay!
I'm going with a show called All In, which is billed as the biggest independent wrestling show ever. And effectively, it started out as a bet. There's a wrestling journalist called Dave Meltzer, and someone asked him on Twitter if he thought that the small wrestling company Ring of Honor could ever sell out a 10,000-seat arena. And he basically said, no, no chance. So Cody Rhodes, who just goes by the name Cody now, from a big wrestling family, used to be in WWE, he replied back to Dave Meltzer saying, I'll take that bet. So what Cody and a tag team called the Young Bucks did, they decided to put together an independent show, not actually as part of Ring of Honor, who they both work for, but getting people from all different independent federations around the world, Mexico, Japan, America, Canada, etc. And they managed to book an arena, the Sears Center in Chicago, 10,000-seat arena. And they didn't know if they were going to sell it out because no independent show. Independent shows usually happen in bingo halls in front of 300 people. So to try and sell out an arena, 10,000 tickets was a crazy thing for them to do. Tickets sold out in under 30 minutes.
Wow.
That's how quickly they went. They could have sold twice as many, I'm sure. So they put on this show that they self-produced, self-financed. Nothing like this has happened in wrestling in 20, 30 years because WWE effectively are a monopoly. There are other things like Ring of Honor, TNA, but they will never be at the level of WWE. So they put on this show. It was an extraordinary achievement. The card had some of the cream of the world's independent talents from Ring of Honor, TNA, CML in Mexico, NJPW in Japan. And it featured some of the greatest matches you'll see in professional wrestling. You had Kazuchika Okada, one of the biggest names in Japanese wrestling, against Marty Scurll, who's a young British wrestler, is fantastic at what he does. You had Kenny Omega, who is a lot of people's pick for being the best wrestler in the world, against Pentagon Jr., who's another just phenomenal athlete. You had Christopher Daniels, who's about 90, not quite, but he's getting there. And he wrestled against Stephen Amell. And if you're not familiar with Stephen Amell, the wrestler, that's because he's not a wrestler, he's an actor. He plays Arrow.
Oh my God.
And it's actually his third professional wrestling match, and he's fucking brilliant. Him and Daniels put on a hell of a match for a guy who's had no real training. He even did a spot off the top rope through a table that's like, a lot of people wouldn't dream of doing that, professionals, let alone some guy who gets paid a lot in Hollywood. Doesn't have to be doing this kind of shit, but he just loves wrestling so much that he put on a great match. The true main event, although weirdly it was in the middle of the show, was Cody Rhodes versus Nick Aldis for the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship, and it was absolutely amazing. One of the best old school throwback 80s grappling style wrestling matches you'll ever see. It was fucking phenomenal and should have ended the show. It was a brilliant achievement, as I've said about 10 times. There were a few technical snafus because they were putting it on themselves. You know, the mics weren't always right. Sometimes the commentators couldn't be heard at the start. There was a botched ending to the women's match, which was a shame because it was a phenomenal match. Some of the matches went too long, which meant they were supposed to have this big celebration at the end with all pyro, but the pay-per-view cut out before it got to that. But, you know, these are minor quibbles in what was not only a tremendous achievement to be able to do this, but it was also great wrestling as well. It was just a phenomenal fucking effort from top to bottom. And you can find it legally. I think through Ring of Honor's services are showing it. New Japan services are showing it. You can find it illegally if you're that way inclined on our old friends, you know, in the torrent sites. Okay. Exactly. Get on it. If you are a wrestling fan, you need to watch this, especially if you're just a WWE fan and aren't familiar with the wider world outside of that, because independent wrestling is riding on the crest of a wave at the minute. It's never been better. Check out All In. It was tremendous.
Are you all in, Mark?
I am. I just want to watch it now.
Yeah. And there are some really big sort of surprise people who show up that I won't spoil.
Cool.
But it's worth watching.
Oh, so you've got a bit of music, a song, and a wrestling pay-per-view.
Wrestling.
Yeah.
What's social media come up with? Because each week it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and I see so much good stuff that ends up me going on Amazon and spending a lot of money.
Yeah. Oh, we've got all sorts. On Facebook, Jane Moss has said Ozark Season 2 on Netflix, a peach of a series directed by and starring Jason Bateman. If you like black comedy or crime dramas of Breaking Bad-esque style, then get it watched as you're in for a treat.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I saw season one. Gemma and I were talking about this off-air, actually. I saw season one. It didn't blow me away, but I love Jason Bateman. Yeah. So I will watch season two as well.
I love him in Juno.
Yeah,
weird one, but it's just great. In ages. Yeah.
Soundtrack.
Have you ever tried and watched Bad Words?
I love that film. I love that he directed that as well. Yeah. Didn't he? He's brilliant
he's
in
so
that.
So offensive. Yeah. It's great.
I need to see that.
That is very good.
Definitely worth watch.
On Twitter, James Hill at JH890H. The new album by Idols is gloriously angry and relevant. Now, I've not heard anything by Idols, have you?
I've heard the name a lot, yeah. But I've not heard them.
They're a highly rated punk band from Bristol, and I definitely want to give them a go.
Nice.
On Facebook, Ian Bittle, a true crime podcast in the dark. The first season's all about a child abduction and the second about a multiple murderer. Both stories are compelling, but the story of the accused in season two really sticks with you. Now, Gemma, I believe you've listened to this.
I'm a big fan of In the Dark. Mm. The first season about the abduction of Jacob Wetterly, it is so heartbreaking, and there's so much fuck-ups going on in the investigation. I have just today started the second season on episode two. Oh my lord, this is investigative journalism at its most finest. A lady called Madeline, now forgive me, I've forgotten her surname, but she is one of the most smartest, most intricate, most detailed journalists I've listened to in a true crime podcast. It's definitely worth a listen.
That one goes on the list.
Yeah, another. Mm. I can't commit to too many podcasts.
There aren't enough hours in the day.
No, I wish I could, but my commute to work is like half an hour, so I don't get to even do a whole episode.
I think it's my book. Like, yeah. I know you guys read a lot, and I think for me, these kind of podcasts are my books.
Yeah.
But it's cracking.
Do you know what? I've started getting fat again, right? So I've started using my exercise bike a bit, trying to get an hour on the bike of a night.
Yeah.
That's probably good podcast listening time, isn't it?
It is.
Just listen to ours.
You joke, but yeah, I did that last
week. I know,
week.
I yeah. do. I always just go back and listen to old ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe I'll start doing that.
Yeah, mm. You won't.
I won't. On Twitter, Jim Boyd at JimBoyd79 has said, Jack Ryan on Amazon Prime. Halfway through and it's blinding. John Krasinski might be the best Jack so far.
Wow.
Which is big words, really, because in the past, in films and so on, Jack's been played by the likes of Harrison Ford and Alec Baldwin.
Yep.
So, you know, to say that old Jim from The Office is better than them, big words.
I hope he does those sort of little ironic looks he does on the camera. You know, yeah. Like raised eyebrow, like, you know, chewing his lip, like... Mm.
I really hope that in season two, the main villain is played by Rainn Wilson.
Have you watched any of it yet?
I haven't. It's on my list. I do want to.
You'd be all over that.
No, there's just so much out at the minute. On Facebook, Darren Wolf just finished reading Lovecraft Country by Matt Ruff and recommend it highly. The stories follow a family's dealings with secret societies and the supernatural, but as it's set in the 50s in America and the family are black, the real horror comes from how they're treated by everyday society. And apparently it's going to be adapted into an HBO series as well.
Wow.
That sounds very good. Thank you, Darren. On Instagram, Dr. S. Tun, a.k.a. BSMS259, has said, One Cut of the Dead, absolutely brilliant and hilarious film about a movie crew making a zombie movie. The best thing I saw at Fright Fest.
Oh, nice, okay. In London.
Yeah, I had a little look into it. It's a Japanese horror comedy that a lot of people are saying is the best horror comedy since Shaun of the Dead.
I want to watch this.
Mm, that sounds awesome.
Me too.
I'd love to go to that festival one
yeah,
day.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
Black Sight was shown Tom Payton's film, and it was, really went down really well. Mm. So, yeah, it sounds good.
Good to hear.
On Facebook, Sarah Jane Thomas has said, I went to see David Byrne, and he was amazing. I still can't believe I saw him, and the way he staged the show was wonderful. So for those who don't know, David Byrne's the former singer of the Talking Heads. Mm-hmm. A few years back, he did a collaboration with St. Vincent.
And I love St. Vincent.
I love St. Vincent. She's cool as hell.
Absolutely.
And they did a song called Who. Yeah. If you're not familiar with that song, go on YouTube because the video is great as
well.
It is.
It was really cool.
Esme at Servilus _ said, You should read Vicious by V.E. Swab. It's a story full of dark twists, two friends who became enemies, and a lot of death. I love it, she says.
I'm noticing a lot of new people recommending stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff, but I just can't commit, and that does sound great. Like the book Darren just said, I want to watch it all and read it all. Yeah. I just can't.
Not enough hours in
the
day.
I might quit my job.
Should we quit our jobs? Yeah. I'm all over that.
Maybe if Haribo send us about 100K, we could all just do another year of podcasting. Yeah.
Or if they just send us loads of boxes of Haribo so we don't have to buy food. We'll just live on Haribo.
I do, though. That's the problem. Genuinely.
You're just one big sweet.
I know.
On Facebook, Josh Griffin, just finished Disenchantment on Netflix, the fantastic new series from Matt Groening. Has a very different pace compared to The Simpsons and Futurama. It takes a couple of episodes to really find its stride, but the payoff is worth the ride.
I've seen it keep flashing up like you will like, but I don't think I will. I like The Simpsons series 3 to about 8, Futurama's wank.
Yeah, I don't like Futurama.
I don't like
yeah.
it. And anything else, I'm just like, it's not The Simpsons.
I'm kind of waiting on the season 5 of BoJack Horseman.
Next week?
I'm kind of waiting for that. And also, I still need to watch the last season of Archer too. So I'd stick
too much to do.
Yeah.
Too much to do.
Too much to do.
And then finally, Genrevision at Genrevision Pod has said a movie everyone should rediscover, Livewire. Pierce Brosnan has to deal with people being turned into living bombs. A clown explodes. That should be reason enough, but there's even more wonderful ridiculousness to discover. Deserves a cult following. It's a film I'd never heard of, but after seeing that, I looked it up. It's from the early 90s, and it appears on a lot of those best cult movies or, you know, best bad movies type lists. So, yeah, maybe that's a potential rewatch.
Hello.
Livewire with
sounds
exploding
awesome.
Clowns.
Yeah. I probably got it and don't even realise on Steelbook, but it sounds awesome. I love that people recommend old stuff as well. I've seen some people say, I hope you don't mind, but I watched this film that's 1990. There's no expiry date on Skip the Recommend. No. Bring whatever you want. Exactly. Bring your gran. If she's 98 and she's entertaining.
She's fun.
Bring her. She's very fun when they take those teeth out. But no, genuinely, bring her along.
Well, this is it. I mean, we say it in the little rhyme at the start. Can be something old, can be something new. Yeah. We mean it, you know.
Something borrowed, something blue.
Yeah, well, not that, but okay. So if you have any more suggestions for Skip to the Recommend, please hit us up on social media at STTE Podcast on Twitter, facebook.com/SkipToTheEndPodcast, Instagram at SkipToTheEndPodcast, or old school email podcast@skiptothend.co.uk. Just thinking about when you said then, Mark, that earlier in the show that emailing's, you know, it's not that old school. My mate Dan came and stayed with me a few weeks ago, and he said something that was really old fashioned, so I thought I'd take the piss out of him, and I went, you know, you're probably the sort of guy that's got an AOL email address. And he actually does.
Really?
He then showed me on his phone that that is still his primary email. Who the fuck is using AOL the year of our Lord 2018?
Does he use Alta Vista to find stuff?
I said the same thing. I said, do you ask Jeeves?
Ask Jeeves. Fucking ridiculous.
Anyway, more recommendations in 2 weeks' time. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast.
I'll be honest. You've probably been told this a lot, but it's quite a short one today. But it is. This episode is really short for us. So, yeah, hopefully short and snappy.
Yeah.
Not too long and oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, I want to big up the competition. The design a logo for Skip to the End. That's what I want to do right now.
It's a huge competition.
Yeah, so the one we've had in already from Jaws 19, he's set a very high bar, but don't let that put you off. We want to see all comers. We did a very similar thing before, didn't we? We just said people draw a picture of us.
And wasn't it? Yeah.
We had a ridiculous amount of entries and a lot of them were very good. Some of them were psychotic and weird and we called the authorities. But many of them were excellent.
Yeah.
So we want to see more like that, please.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one that was really good? That I think someone called Katie drew of us three, but I look like something like off Planet the Apes.
You look like a gorilla, didn't you?
Yeah, monkey face.
Yeah, and it was really good. Everyone was accurate, but for some reason she made me look like something off Planet the Apes, and I didn't like that. The rest of the picture, you two look great.
We did, didn't we?
We had some really weird ones where I was like, what the fuck? Like me holding your head.
That was pretty dark, wasn't it?
Those people have been blocked.
Yeah, we've had to change our numbers.
But I love the fact we're giving people the opportunity to have their logo as our official logo.
Yeah.
That is big.
Yeah.
It's humongous.
And you are signing away all rights to it. When you provide it to us on Twitter, we now own the copyright.
Yeah.
So let's just get that out there now before people start trying to get money off us.
We haven't got any money, so
don't bother. We might be able to chuck you a couple of bottles of Brothers, but that's the best we can do.
What about the next episode, though? Apart from the competition, which we won't even be announcing the winner because it's running for two, we must have some awesome stuff coming up.
Oh, we've got loads of stuff coming up. The topic is going to be our top three screenwriters. And again, like I said, I like giving those people who are overlooked and underappreciated a go, you know. And if you're not familiar, the same thing I said when we did cinematographers, if you're not familiar off the top of your head who your favourite screenwriters are, think about what your favourite movies are and then go on IMDb.
Yeah.
And you will start to see a lot of repeat names, the same offenders over and over again.
Mm. It's quite hoity-toity for us. We'll have chai lattes. It is one of them, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very serious for us.
Like a scarf and a beret.
Yeah.
Maybe a pipe.
Yeah.
What's our rewatch?
Oh my goodness. Rocky.
Wow.
We're going to be watching Rocky.
Just think of the soundtrack. Do you know what I mean? It's going to be epic.
That's made your life easy for the edit, innit? Because you already know what music you're going
to
use.
That's it. Yeah. And the thing is, like, let's be honest about it. Me and Ben have been to the Rocky steps.
We have.
There we go.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
We miss you, Philadelphia. Not that it's
Philly.
Been blown up or anything, but
it's still there.
Yeah.
It's just we're not there.
Yeah.
But it's still there.
Yeah.
And who are we masturbating over?
Oh, only the one and only Oliver Stone.
He's got some big, big movies, and a lot of his movies I've not seen in a good long time, so I think I'm going to do a little blitz.
Nice. I think I already know what you two are going to pick.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, I mean, let's see what time forbids us, but probably.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And what are we reviewing, Gemma?
We're going to be reviewing a remake. So we're going to be reviewing Predator.
Oh, is that the...
By Shane Black.
The life story of Jimmy Savile?
No.
It is. It's a documentary, yes. Only available on Netflix. No.
Directed by Shane Black. So yeah. We're going to be reviewing that. You're going to hear what we think about it. We might like it, we might not, but hey.
Well, stay tuned.
If that's not juiced you up, I don't know what will.
What do you think, Ben? Hey, seven.
Fine. And we'll have all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll give you more recommendations. We'll give you more prizes. We'll give you more banter and more bullshit. See you in 2 weeks. Far beyond those walls, please.